This episode of Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by Shutterstock.com. With over 20 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips, Shutterstock helps you take your creative projects to the next level. For 30% off your new account, go to Shutterstock.com and use offer code WEEKENDCONFIRMED11.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
Charging on into the November rain here in Southern California. This is Garnet Lee.
It is November rain today.
Yeah.
There was November rain.
Hold on, maybe that's what we need. Can I call an audible? That driving the engineer crazy. Maybe that could be our music. I had another one picked out. I don't know. We'll decide. Later.
They'll have already heard it. Oh no, they won't have heard.
They will
it
not yet. Have heard it yet. Yeah. You won't know until you
that's
get to the break.
That's a pretty good song.
That's all right.
You
it's
know
a
what?
Moody.
I met somebody and made me feel old because they had never heard anything from Use Your Illusion 1 or 2, which were the first CDs I ever purchased. Historically, don't look at me like you've never heard "Use Your Illusion."
Well, and
seriously,
and now now Axl Rose sounds.
Oh,
like
come on, you
he's
must
gargling hot asphalt.
I'm sure.
If I heard of it, I didn't know I was listening to it.
So that was the legendary Guns N' Roses 2-disc set. Use Your Illusion 1. Use Your Illusion. We're losing him.
You know, Arnie's gonna look like he's gonna hear this and look at me and be like, "Jason, no."
Seriously, dude. No. Seriously. Anyway. Trust me, people have heard it. Anyway, this is Weekend Confirmed. Those two fine folks right there, Jeff Cannata.
Hey.
Okay. That was dramatic.
That's me.
And back from Naughty Dog there, what is the official title here? There, lead web developer, Jason Paul.
Ooh.
Present.
And big time car fanatic, racing fan. We're going to get into the car game discussion, Little Most Wanted, Little Forza Horizon, that kind of stuff. And Mr. Jeff Mattis is here.
Yes,
welcome
I have
back.
Returned. Yes, thank you. It's great to be here.
So that's
hey,
the crew.
I got to say something right at the top. I literally just came here from
buying socks.
No. Close. Kind of. It was warm and it was adorable to hold. It was holding Christian Spicer's new baby girl.
Oh.
Yes. Ellie. They call her Ellie. Her name is Estelle. He just became a father mere days ago this weekend.
Congratulations Christian.
Wow. Yeah. It was really cool. I saw in the official thread there was a whole group of people offering him congratulations. I know he appreciates that, and I can show you guys pictures. She's adorable, and he's a proud papa. So
what you're saying
cool.
is
that's awesome.
Next time I get really down about the way the threads are going, I should just father a child, and people will
that's
love,
all you gotta
me,
do.
Love me for a minute.
That is all you got to do.
It's a quick fix with the long tail.
Look, this is us with her holding a PlayStation controller.
Aww. I like her already.
She's cute. Holding a PS3
aww, you
controller.
That's beautiful. Got to start them young.
Yeah. Cute. Mm. I was just over there. Anyway.
Maybe by the time she grows up, they'll have a female lead in a Grand Theft Auto.
Oh,
no. Wow.
Probably not.
Yeah. So we'll talk about the Grand Theft Autos here today. Like I said, we'll talk about a little racing game action. I don't know. We're going to talk about some other stuff. Most impressive to me, though, is that you guys, I think we're going to go back to Assassin's Creed 3, which Andrew Yoon reviewed for us and had a little bit of a, you know, peaks and valleys, I think. Peaks and
yep.
valleys. Had some high points that he was down with and had some low points that he was not quite so down with.
Yeah.
But you're going to take issue with Yoon. We could almost think like a segment, taking issue with Yoon.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Okay, he has finished the game. I have not. So take my opinion with a grain of salt as
invalid.
Always.
Opinion invalid.
But while I agree with a lot of what he said about the game, his main thesis statement was that, you know, we've heard a lot about how the game takes a long time to kick into gear and that you do –
well, it takes a long time before you become the main protagonist.
Yes, before and even then, before the main protagonist is the person featured in all the commercials.
Right.
You know, like that persona, that costume, all that stuff. It takes a good 5 hours of playing.
Before you're the cloak-wearing, tomahawk-throwing badass.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Andrew's position was that he thought the early game stuff was the strongest stuff in the game. And I'm shocked to hear him – now that I have played it because I hadn't played it at that point yet last week when he was talking.
Just for a non-spoilery frame of reference, what sequence approximately are you in right now?
Boston Tea Party.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, you're a bit further. I think that's probably – I'm only in sequence 7, I think I just
said. No, that's right around the same place.
Okay, so I'm about to get there then, I guess.
Yeah, right around the same. I mean, it's not – yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and I'm – I really didn't like the game for the first 3 to 4 hours. I really didn't like
really
it.
Really didn't?
Really?
I actively didn't like it.
Wait, what didn't you like about it though?
I found it to be very I found the world – like nobody's doing world building better than these guys. I mean this – it feels like it could have been – this could have been a Rockstar game. You know, we're going to be talking about Grand Theft Auto later. This is amazing world building, like even better than previous Assassin's Creed games. The –
yeah, it's gorgeous, and it looks and it's so transportive. Like, you know, because you don't see this setting anywhere else. Really, it's really refreshing to be back in a time period where, you know, and I'm sort of a history dork, so I like running into all those characters and you know, all the actual buildings and historical events and stuff. It's
but even before that, I mean, we're in what 1750, 17 something like that when
17,
we start
17 something.
No, I mean. Yeah. Yeah, I think the game starts much earlier than
– right there in the Eastern Seaboard.
Yeah. Thank you, public education, for informing this discussion.
Right.
Anyway, total side note, I love the fact that this like is surreptitiously informing a whole generation of kids. Like it's about history. It's a game about fucking the shit that's – they're hating at school, they go home and they pay money to play it.
Yeah.
That's pretty rad.
Well, you know, if you put the free second issue of GameCube plug on your iPad, you could see all that stuff because that was what we pulled out. We actually highlighted all of the historic events that are reflected in parts of the game, which is cool.
So great.
I don't even know if it's surreptitious. I mean, it's just – it's part of the DNA of the game. And it was to a degree part of the DNA in the Renaissance, but there's not
– But it's sort of a spoonful of sugar – for all these kids, you know, for their broccoli of actual,
I think there's like, just history. a higher degree of immediacy because we can, you know, it's much more relatable for us. Like 200 years ago in North America, American history is far more easy to relate to than what we think of as the era that spawned the paintings that are on the halls of different museums in Europe. Like 400 and 500 years ago.
Yeah.
Is it really that big a difference time-wise? Not really, not in the big scheme of things. You know, obviously we're talking about the year 2000 and we're talking about like, you know, 1600s versus 1800s. But I guess we don't go to 1800s. I wonder if they could do the Industrial Revolution. Anyway, that's a whole other thing. Anyway, I just think
it's
a tighter connection because maybe it's not – I wonder if for folks in Europe – the Assassin's Creed 2 arc had a similar sort of immediacy.
Well, there's a wonderful little
because you're
moment
right
that when you're back in Desmond in the present, mm-hmm. or near future, I guess it is, and you're talking to that British member of the team, and you can sort of just spam the button and he'll kind of pontificate for you. If you listen to what he says, it's interesting. He kind of gives a British perspective on the whole, like an alternate version of, you know, like his perspective of his people, like, hey, you guys didn't want to pay taxes, dude. That kind of sucks. You know? Like, that's basically – and it's a really interesting discussion that they have.
Bloody colonists.
Yeah. Anyway, all of this is side note to what I was trying to explain before, which is what I was not having fun with at the beginning was how – despite that world building and the spectacular visuals and the place that I was in being so interesting, I found what I was doing to not be fun at all. And – I found like it was just Simon Says for so long and it was so linear and it was just plodding through all that stuff at
the
beginning.
The tutorial for that game, if you really think about it, doesn't end.
Yeah, you're still learning new stuff like, 5 hours, yeah, 6 hours in.
Yeah, so it's like, I mean, I think some of that early, like the simplicity of the mechanics earlier, but I mean, I really liked, for example, one of the first things you do is climb around inside this giant playhouse while this stage play is going on.
Yeah, that was awesome.
And it's just like – it's so impressive. You know, it's one of those things where I'm like hanging on the wall, shimmying around, and I actually stop to like watch the play for a minute.
Yes.
You know, like it's
I agree with you. That moment is awesome.
So, Jeff, you played this right after Halo, right?
I did.
So – and knowing the sort of mental roller coaster we go on reviewing games because you're under the gun and you're trying to play through them – how much of this do you think would be then also maybe a comparative situation between Halo 4, which throws open the doors to the game and says, okay, Chief, shit, under attack, go, kill things. And like all of a sudden it's like Halo holds – Halo's the opposite. Halo throws you right in and immediately you are in the thick of the shit. It is right back to Halo 3. You've got the zero-G combat. You've got all – you're immediately having weapons everywhere. It's not like it even meets out the weapons to you. Like you, before you know it, you've got, you know, six or seven weapons around and different caches to choose from. You're facing, you know, enemies coming from other directions.
Which I much prefer. I much prefer, and even thinking back,
you want the action like right there.
Well, it's not so much the action; it's the freedom and creativity to be to play around in the sandbox.
But what, Assassin's is telling you a denser story.
It's certainly a dense story. I feel like
I don't know, because like right now I'm only about three and a half hours in, and I feel like the world is so large. And there's so many things I could do. I actually need some direction, or I'd just get lost. I'd be searching for, you know, Benjamin Franklin's sheets all day, like paper sheets, whatever, all day. So I think, like, the linear story in such an open-world game works for me, where it's not a GTA, right, where you just run around and do shit all day long.
It definitely feels more like GTA than any of the previous Assassin's Creed stuff.
Really?
To me.
Well, it's because when you get to the city part where it really opens up, they've still done a really good job with the volume of the number of different tasks or things you can do. Now, they're not all like super crazy inventive or, you know, like you said, there's some collection stuff. But there's also some, you know, like you'll see a homestead mission on your map and you're like, well, what's this? And you go and it's basically these homestead missions. When you complete them, they're all sort of different. Some of them, they entail different objectives. But the bottom line is completing these sort of builds up your home base and gives you access to more materials and crafting stuff and that sort of thing. And that's the way that they integrated those, I think, is pretty neat because you get some historical context of the world and all that
sort of stuff. What do you guys think about the approach they took with Connor being a outsider to the core demographic of the time? I mean, he's part Native American and part British, neither of which are colonists.
Right.
Colonists? Where did that come from? Neither of which are colonists.
Or have colonics.
At least I call myself.
Or wear cologne for that matter.
Yeah. Anyway, neither of which are colonists. And I thought that that's an interesting switch on the things that they had done before, where, you know, Ezio, obviously an important part, a big family in Renaissance time, was tied right into the society, tied right into all of the social structure of the time. Whereas here, you're kind of in this weird space. It's at least that was the way they sell. I haven't played the game, but they were selling it from outside of that.
Connor's story is handled so well, and I was totally drawn into that character. And once you're finally playing as Connor, the game completely took off for me. And that's when all of my negative feelings got flip-flopped. And that's what my issue is with Yoon, because he basically said the opposite of that. He said the beginning he thought was the strongest part. And I say, if you're like me, muddle through those first 4 hours and the game gets way better, way better. And once you're finally playing as Connor and doing the stuff that he can do and hunting and free running through the treetops so exhilarating.
So good.
And They managed to make that work. Like, that shouldn't work. That should seem ridiculous. And it never feels like, oh, there's the exact platform I need to go from A to B to C. It feels like, oh, there's a bunch of trees and I'm figuring out how to fly through them.
Well, and there are enough forks and branches in the upper tree path that you're not just pressing forward. Like you said, you're actually going, okay, here comes a fork. Now I'm going to go. And if you want to free run through it, it creates this really exhilarating, like, you feel like you're flying through the trees and flipping around tree trunks. And it's really –
I can't wait to play that part, because I remember I was chasing after Zio. And I would see her like running. I'm like, I don't need to get up to the tree. I'm keep trying to climb up there. Can't do anything. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, I can't wait. Let me do this.
Yeah, it's really cool. And it works so well. I mean, it definitely is a game that feels very reminiscent to me of Red Dead and all those wonderful things I liked about Red Dead. But all of a sudden now in Red Dead, I have superpowers too. I can like freaking climb and leap and jump. And all that free running stuff is so much fun in a wilderness environment, in a forest. It is awesome.
Well, and they've even done subtle stuff to improve like the navigation. So when you're running, and there's still an element of, you know, your character feels like he has mass.
Right.
But when you're moving, so if you're in a dead sprint going straight forward and you move left or right, rather than have this sort of awkward turning motion, he actually kind of – his body leans left or right.
Man, the animations, I feel like they've upped the ante on those. as well.
Yeah, what they've done is actually like turn his legs.
Right.
So like when you're turning, his legs turn as well as like upper body tilts.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it, like,
and you can really see it in those loading screens. Like,
yeah, that's where you notice really it. Watch it.
But the hunting stuff is so much more fun than it was for me in Red Dead. Mm-hmm. And you have so many different options of how you can hunt. All that stuff is super cool. And then the story also kicks into high gear for me with Connor because it's a much more relatable character. You're in this – you really are building up from nothing. You're not just an instantly an awesome assassin. You sort of have to earn that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm
having a great time with it. I will. It was funny. The last mission that I played last night was Paul Revere's ride, and it struck me as it was actually kind of humorous because I was like, "Oh, this is interesting and fun," but at the same time, I was like, "Really, you're relegating the main character this to like a chauffeur character for Paul Revere?" Because basically, you're just both on the same horse, like going from place to place. You know, it's a neat way to incorporate Paul Revere. At the same time, I was kind of like, "Okay, maybe."
Yeah.
Maybe a different choice there.
And another thing I have to really compliment is how they managed to pull off the ship navigation and ship combat.
Oh, yeah, Andrew. So Andrew loved that part.
Unbelievably cool. And
would you play a whole game of that?
I might get a little tired of it if it was the entire game, but the mechanics are really solid. And I'm not a sailor. I've never sailed, you know,
16th century
boats, 18th century boats. Yeah, I don't know where sailors hang out. I've often asked. But it feels authentic to a layman. You know, it feels like, oh, I have to incorporate the direction of the wind and I have to, you know.
Well,
it's obviously very simplified, but.
They've made it feel really, really, I don't want to use the word epic, but that's what they made it feel. They made it feel this really, like you feel like you're on the deck of a ship and stuff's crashing and it's like you're looking everywhere. There's all this detail. But at the same time, it's the mechanics of it are still streamlined enough that you don't feel like you're overwhelmed by what you have to do.
Yeah,
you're
like every minor, like, small detail.
Yeah, like I know how to steer. I know how to like aim the weapons. It's not that tough. It's very visually rewarding, but you know, it's very, very.
But it's also one step up from. It's not just, you know, pilot your ship like you would pilot any other
airplane.
Like you're piloting your horse.
Right.
You know,
right.
It's not. Yeah. It's got its own set of rules that are interesting,
ridiculous,
and well thought out.
As this may sound, that right there is the problem that Star Trek games always had.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's something, you know, goofy as it may sound, there's something romantic about the notion of great sailing ships or even great ocean-going ships and the sort of pace of maneuvering and combat that takes place in them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Star Trek, the TV show and movies always caught were these grand maneuvers. They weren't doing Immelmanns. They were doing, you know, like I'm going to hide behind the planet and then I'm going to dupe him by going through this.
It's a thinking man's game.
Right.
Yeah.
A thinking man's
game,
with some tactics, with a great deal of tactical maneuvering to it and that sort of thing, and then allocating resources inside your ship, like the sort of stuff that FTL is cool for.
Right, right.
So there's like both of those layers, and then that's also the same thing it sounds like comes across in this.
Well, it's a little more action-y than that, but it's still – it's got more to it than just a pure action moment.
Mm-hmm.
There's – You're dealing with your positioning and how the wind is affecting your sails and how much sail you want to put behind it. It's cool.
It's actiony without being twitchy. It's not like, you know, oh my God, I didn't lower the sails quick enough or whatever. It's very deliberate, everything that you're doing.
Also,
I asked that, by the way, because one of the games that I'm secretly looking forward to is World of Warships.
Mm.
Because it just looks cool. Like this whole idea of captaining a World War II era giant ship out on the sea in a massively multiplayer online game where we're all floating around in giant ships and blowing the shit out of each other. Sounds awesome.
That's not a game for me, but
I applaud you guys for wanting to.
Yeah. But also, I've been playing the entire game so far, AC3, in 3D on my 3D TV.
Oh, really?
And it's great. It's great. I did not really love Gears in 3D, and apologies to all those present. Uncharted felt like it was a lot of concessions made to make the 3D work. It felt like I lost the anti-aliasing and stuff like that. AC3 looks – I was going back and forth. It looks just as good in 3D, and those worlds just pop. And it made me go, oh, I really hope – for the first time – and maybe it's more because now I have a 3D TV that's awesome. But it was for the first time – I was sad that it seems like 3D has become less of a bullet point on the box because I immediately after this experience, I was looking at Need for Speed. I was like, oh, please support 3D. Please support 3D. And it doesn't. Mm-hmm. I was totally in love with the look and feel of the 3D.
So are you playing 360 or PS3?
360.
Is the is the free tree running as awesome as I imagine it would be in 3D?
Yeah, and the ship stuff is amazing in 3D. I mean, it all really works.
So here's something that's interesting: is that for those who don't know, Jeff was the beneficiary of a Twitter contest.
You say it like it's a contest. I didn't enter anything. I there was no entering. I tweeted out.
You did the hashtag thing.
No, right? No? I didn't. I tweeted out the television that I wanted.
Uh-huh.
They happened to be searching. I swear to God, this sounds like such a lie, especially in light of what we've been talking about. But this is exactly what happened. I tweeted out after CES the TV that I was most excited about coming out of CES. Uh-huh. Like, if I was going to get a TV, I'd get this LG TV. The PR people at LG saw that.
No dummies.
And gave me one. Shut and up. I swear to God, I did not ask for it. Yeah, I didn't ask
now,
for
now,
it.
Now, just a disclaimer, the results may vary if you try this at home.
Right. Well, they gave out five of them. They picked out tweets of people that they weren't all just
personalities.
Yeah. I'm assured that that didn't hurt my chances.
Of course.
But I did not enter it. I was not seeking it out. In fact, they did not ask me for anything in return.
The funny thing is you're not really a tech blogger, although it comes up here. And the reason I wanted to bring it up was for clarity because I did want to make this point. Like, we beat that. We did
but it. I want to reiterate, they did not ask for anything in return.
So.
But I happen to love the TV. I really honestly do.
The reason it was important to bring that up is that the other thing is that that's a passive 3D screen. And I've been so I've been to your house, so obviously we've checked out 3D on it.
Yep.
And I actually I don't like 3D at all, really. I sort of like 3D on your television at least because I don't notice any flickering because the glasses are passive. So there's no shuttering. There's none of that, like, that weird and, you know, motion-y
flicking
headache.
Each eye on and off.
That flicking where, you get dark light, which really messes with my head. And the other thing is that I could see myself actually wearing those glasses for, you know, a while, like a playing session for a game, because they're so light. Because they're just, like, you know, they're very lightweight frames with some whatever they do. Like, I guess it's a – does it work the same as cell phone? How does it work? Is it like the prismatic thing again?
It's exactly the same thing as in theaters. If you're – those disposable
– yeah.
Ones that you get in, when you go to the movie theater, they work exactly the same.
Whereas, you know what? I have had my television, my new television now for 6 months, and I have never once turned on 3D. I have no interest in turning it on either. I just no interest at all. Not even going to buy the glasses.
Assassin's Creed 3. Turn it on.
I'm telling you, dude.
I just try it out. I mean, I would at that point.
For the flashy eye thing? Meh.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. It's like I would at least try it. But I think it's
the
cool.
The other cool thing is that I have like 10 pairs of glasses because they cost nothing. So if people are over and we want to watch something in 3D, just freaking pass them out. You know, there's no – that's why I prefer the passive shutter.
Do you
individually this sounds like an ad for the television. And this was completely side note to the fact that we're talking about AC3 and I really dug the 3D implementation in that game, which is why I brought it up.
But you're right.
I'm not a seller.
You can buy this TV down at Best Buy.
It's a good TV. I really like it.
A lot of 3D games do seem to wind up having like the aliasing issue, a lot of shimmery effects. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. They've definitely not been cool. So it's cool that it works.
I was really bummed. I was all excited when to put in Gears of War, which supported 3D, and Uncharted as well. And both of those, I was like, oh, you give up something. You give up a fidelity mm-hmm. when you go to 3D with those games. And I just did not notice that with
I guarantee you it's better than they included a package of those old 3D glasses in AC Brotherhood, I think.
Oh, really?
And so you could turn it on, and it was like the red and blue, and all the colors looked all fucked up and everything. It worked, sort of.
But
I wouldn't have played the game.
I hope that people continue to support it because I feel like there was this period there for like 6 months where every game was supporting it, and then nobody cared, and then they stopped supporting it.
That was all. You know, a lot of TVs are coming out with 3D. Like, 2 years ago, it was like super being promoted. Movies were doing it again. So of course the game's tacked on, but it's intensive to make a game in 3D. Like it is a lot of work.
Hmm.
And it starts to take away assets from the main core features of the game, right?
Like
the main team. So we'll see.
Look,
I mean,
TV manufacturers have moved on. The thing that they try to sell you a television with now is smart television.
Yeah, 3D
was their hoped for reason to get people who were early adopters of HDTVs to go buy a new HDTV. Didn't really work out. So they've moved on now to smart TV and, you know, all sorts of streaming and internet connectivity functionality, and that's working to a higher
we
degree.
We already know that.
We already know that's working.
Next, I think the next major fad, I mean, this has gone to a tech blog talk, right?
Yeah,
now,
let it happen.
But I guarantee, like, 4K is already getting popped off.
Oh, yeah.
And I really think 8K is going to, like, I wouldn't be surprised to see some.
So is 4K
going to
be, do you think 4K will be the 720p?
I don't think so, dude, because I don't think there's going to be a difference between, a perceptible difference between 4K and 8K. Like, 4K is so mind-bogglingly sharp. And yet, and you could really see the difference between 720p and 1080p.
Yeah.
But 4K and 8K, it's like, come on.
Do you see?
I think 4K, first of all, 4K has to do well, and there still has a lot of things, like it's got to be supported somehow. There's got to be a lot of players that can run it.
Yep.
There's only very few movies actually, or recorders that can record in it.
Yeah. Right now. But
that's,
but 2 years.
5 years, yeah.
2 years. Yeah, 5 years, my ass. 5 years, we'll be talking about the next thing after that.
Because I believe Samsung's already making an 8K TV. I mean, at 8K, they have the like 87 or 97 inch 4K TV, and I'm like, ready.
Because Milky was tweeting the other day about seeing a 4K at a electronics show in Japan, and he said, like, look, it was sitting there next to the very latest high end technology in 1080p and just destroying
it.
Just destroying them. And I can't imagine that because right now, to me, 1080p looks so good.
I think it's like.
But the argument of that is then you put a Retina iPad next to an iPad 2. Because iPad 2 looks great. And then you put a Retina iPad next to it, and you're like, oh, I get it.
I see now.
Yeah, it's like, whoa. Anyway, so Assassin's Creed 3, were you playing for a review or for yourself?
We're doing a review on TRS next week.
So I know Jason and Jeff are both playing for themselves, so I'm going to come to them in a second.
Sure.
But for you, how much do you think you'll keep playing after you finish the review?
Oh, well, I want to keep playing. I mean, I'm already I had a big turn. I literally was like, I hate this game. I'm not having fun.
Really?
Didn't
know it was that hardcore.
I texted Dan. I was like, I hate this game. And he was like, just keep playing, dude. It gets better. It gets better. And he was right. To his credit, he was right because I hate the desyncing for these tiniest little fucking thing that I didn't know that I was supposed to do. That bugs the shit out of me. Like, yeah. Oh, you lost your friend. Really? Because I didn't know my friend was following me. I wasn't clear about – I didn't know that it was my responsibility to stay close to my friend. Or – I mean, I'm not talking about tailing missions. I'm talking about the little blue man that fucking follows me around. Or – God, there was like five or six different things. Oh, and the game has a lot of glitches, by the way. I've run into several.
So that was one thing Andrew didn't bring up, but that's been in a number of the reviews, there's a lack of technical polish, apparently.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like much more than any of those other huge open world games, though. Because I remember I'm a big fan of the series, one aside, and every single one of those games has had like really janky, weird stuff that'll crop up from time to time. This doesn't feel much worse than that.
Some people are then are exaggerating. Would you say?
Based on my experience on the 360, I've run into a few things where I've been like, okay, that's obviously a glitch or a bug.
As a big fan of the series, what's your take?
Right now, I mean, I don't want to render final verdict till I finish it.
But right now,
first impressions, it's up there with two for me in terms of like one of the best two games of the series.
That's an endorsement.
Yeah, it's because of that whole, here's a whole new world, boom, you're in it, and it's so fully realized and so well detailed, and here's a whole bunch of new stuff. And, you know, we really haven't had that full reboot since.
So let me ask you another question then, because I played 2, and after getting into it, I did really enjoy it. It took me a little while to get into it. Once I got into it, I really enjoyed it.
It's got a slow burn, yeah.
I'm not going to play Brotherhood of Revelation. I watched Ariel play Brotherhood. She hasn't played Revelation yet. Now, not having played Revelation and only having watched Brotherhood, can I play 3?
They do an awesome catch-you-up stuff
at the beginning.
They do. Awesome.
They do. It is still an incredibly dense and, one could even argue, overwrought, you know, narrative that they're trying to spin.
Yeah.
Or you know, different narratives at cross purposes or interweaving and stuff. It's very, very complex, and it's maybe up its own ass a little bit. But most games.
Well, I think the good news is, having played 2, I at least know the big overarching mumbo jumbo story.
You're not going
to. I'm using mumbo joy to avoid spoilers if you haven't played it, but like the big overarching story behind the whole thing of like what they're doing and the nature
of it. You're not dealing with that more than you are dealing with that.
Which is a shame because like that was the whole thing even through all these games. It's like I always kind of want them to do, and maybe it would wind up hokey. I kind of always want more of the sci-fi goofy part than just.
There's plenty of it, but it's just.
Jason, you don't agree?
I think the sci-fi part is cool, but for me, I'm totally a history buff and I like the playing off of real life history and seeing different versions or a different perspective of something that could have happened if you want to play around with like that idea.
The
I mean, for me, I think this is, and I'm, like I said, only a couple hours in, but I like this Assassin's Creed way more than any other Assassin's Creed.
The minute-to-minute storytelling is still incredibly strong and good and well-written. It's the meta story that you could, you know, people are going to have arguments about whether or not it makes sense or if it's, you know, ridiculous or not or too ridiculous. But the actual in-the-game minute-to-minute story so far has been really, really well done.
Yeah, it seems to me, without any spoilers, it seems to me that that whole beginning 4 hours is only there to give you a twist that doesn't matter to me.
Maybe not yet.
A casual fan of the series, it doesn't matter to me.
Maybe,
and I was
you
like,
get the
you
twist.
Could have truncated that and not lost anything, and I would have been happy starting out with Connor.
And for me, if somebody's into the series, and I won't review that or won't go into what that spoiler was, but it wasn't like a revelatory, oh my God, that's so awesome. It was just like, oh, okay. In fact, I kind of intuited that that was the case. Anyway, sorry. This is double speak, makes no sense.
Do you think it was worth having that whole, I think, bloated beginning section?
See, I'm between you and Andrew. I didn't love it. I didn't hate it. I thought it was, I mean, it was long, but I thought it was good. And, it, you know, I was interested in it and moved the story along. I'm much happier now that I'm Connor.
Okay, I'm going to dig you out of this circling bloated opening section that you've wound up on here. We're gonna take a little break when we come back on the other side. You can close that thought because I had a great thought. I was like, what if you could do like a primer game and go back and actually change things and see? It'd be really hard to figure out.
Time traveling games.
I would dig that. Hmm. Anyway, stick around. We still have three big sections of Weekend Confirmed yet to come. All right, so we're taking a little break here so we can talk about our friends at Shutterstock.com who are generously bringing you this episode of Weekend Confirmed. At Shutterstock.com, you'll find the perfect image or video for your next creative project. So whether it's for your website, a publication, an advertisement, a video, or any other type of project, you can choose from over 20 million high-quality stock photos, illustration, vectors, and video clips. Shutterstock sources images from around the world and puts them at your fingertips, and many of their contributors are professional photographers. Shutterstock is a complete offering. They have an award-winning iPad app, so you can search on the go and display images during presentations. They have excellent customer service as well, with dedicated reps and 24-hour support throughout the week. You know, I was looking at the site today and found a couple of images, depending on what you're out there doing. On the one hand, they have a nice stock photo of the Wii U remote controller. And then since it was election time, I was looking through some of the political stuff and, okay, maybe call me goofy, but I came across Mount Rushmore. Can't really beat Mount Rushmore, so there you go. Shutterstock has it all. You can try Shutterstock today by signing up for a free account. There's no credit card needed. Just start an account and begin using Shutterstock to help imagine what your next project could be like and save assets you find right to your new lightbox. Once you decide to purchase, use offer code WEEKENDCONFIRMED11, and new accounts will receive 30% off any package. That's Shutterstock.com, and for 30% off your new account, use offer code WEEKENDCONFIRMED11. We thank Shutterstock for their continued support of Weekend Confirmed. All right, so what's great is while the break was on, Jason's like, I don't want to kill the rabbits, man. They're just cute little bunnies.
So like, when I was playing Red Dead, you brought up hunting with Red Dead versus Assassin's Creed, and I'm playing Red Dead, and there was parts where you have to go hunt. But I had no desire to kill buffalo because we've already
they're
done
an
that.
Endangered species. Yeah, they're
like,
how are you
going to
get that manifest destiny achievement?
No.
I mean, it's an actual achievement. If
yeah,
you kill,
I'll pass on that one. Right, so then that's what I was asking Jeff, like, hey, did you like how much? Because like, I have no desire now to really hunt unless you force me to. Oh yeah, let me kill all the deer in the world.
Well, you know, you can also hunt the deadliest game. You can hunt people.
Brits.
In fact, that's funny. I almost forgot. That's one of the glitches that I ran into was I killed a man and it let me – it had the
skin?
Contextual thing to skin him.
What?
And I skinned him and got a deer pelt.
I was like on the deer.
When I walked over to him and it said skin and I was like – oh, this game just got fucked up. Because I actually thought it was, I didn't think it was an error yet. I thought it was like, oh, shit. I'm going to make it
Wait, hold on. Worse yet,
skin.
You did it.
Oh, hell yeah, I did it. I wanted to see what would happen.
Yeah, it puts lotion in the basket.
That's totally. So good.
You are a sick...
I tucked my genitals between my legs and I skinned the man.
All you motherfuckers made fun of me about Joe Dirt, too.
What?
Oh, does he make fun of?
Not even going there.
Yeah, you already did.
You made fun of me for like.
It's not good when me talking about tucking my genitals between my legs isn't the creepiest thing that was said in the last 5 seconds.
I was trying to get you out of that, bro.
I appreciate that.
I was trying to throw you a line.
Anywho.
Isn't she not a big fat girl?
I like how many options there are in the hunting in this game, because you really have a cool set of tools in your tool belt that you can hunt with. And you can hunt from the skies, you know, you can hunt from the treetops, which is awesome.
Oh, and being able to assassinate anyone with any weapon instead of just the little blades is pretty awesome. So, like, you know, diving off of a ledge with a sword in your hand.
I never want to use any other weapon except for the blades. Really? Every fight scene, I always do it just blades, just like counter and stab you in the neck.
Dude, rope dart.
Tomahawk.
Rope dart.
Hold on, what the hell is a rope dart?
It's a dart with a rope attached to it. So it's like what Scorpion uses in Mortal Kombat.
Get over here!
Exactly. Yeah.
That's in the game?
Yes.
Yeah, you can string guys up from tree, like
above. Oh, right. Okay. Yeah.
Saw that in the video.
Yeah.
So what do you think of the combat? Andrew actually didn't like the combat. I didn't intend to go back into Assassins, but...
Not in love with the combat. It's better than it has been, but not... It's no Batman, which is really what you're going to be comparing this to.
Right.
You know, Arkham Asylum, Arkham City.
It's just not as fluid. I mean, at least with my fighting style, I just want to wait and don't take any damage, so I just counter you. Yeah. Like, attacking you seems like a bad decision.
I think that the one thing about Assassins that held true through 2, and I looked like it did through Brotherhood, and I'm guessing it still does here, is that it's sort of that, like, perfect case example of being in a kung fu movie where dudes just line up. Well, they don't line
up. Much less so here.
Like, it's like everybody's got it's like a take a number combat system. Number 22, it's your turn to die.
Yeah. Well, I'm just going to wait and see how Larry does. Oh, shit, Larry's dead. No, I'll try.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, it's still, for me, the most fun I'm having is going and doing those eagle perches and synchronizing and just exploring the environment, going and doing these peg leg Pete, like, treasure hunt things where you know where
like
it is
Goonies.
And you have to figure out how to get there. Like, that, for me, is the most fun about Assassin's Creed is – experiencing the story, A, and B, like, just living in that world and exploring it and using the free running, and especially when you can do it in the wilderness where you're not chased by guards every 4 seconds, which I find extremely tedious and not fun. And I actually think the game Saboteur really, in retrospect, got a very short end of that stick, because I think they figured out a way to do that really, really well in that game as well. And it's too bad not enough people played that.
A couple of people have recommended that to me. I never played it.
It's a great game. I played it to the end, and I had a really good time. I mean, it was flawed in its own ways, but
if you're
I
looking
liked
for something cheap to play right now, Saboteur was for 360 and PS3. Great deal out there. Super
and it's got
inexpensive.
Like boobs in it.
It does have boobs.
And World War II. Yeah. World War II era French underground?
Yeah.
That's the idea, right? French underground during
Paris.
Yeah, you're in Vichy, France. So there you go. If you're interested in that sort of stuff.
And you can climb to the top of the Eiffel Tower and leap off it, which is awesome.
What?
Yeah, dude.
All right. It's sold.
Well, who knows? And we're bringing it back now. Bringing back Saboteur 4 years too
totally
late.
Underrated.
No, there's a game on here that I haven't talked about, but we will when we talked about other games that I will tell you. We'll talk about bringing it back.
Bring it back? All right. So, yeah, the other thing, and maybe this is because I know I'm super late to the party here, but I'm watching Fringe, and I'm in season 3 now. Holy shit, that show gets really, really good. And
I did not watch that.
You didn't watch Fringe?
Oh, dude, you got to watch it.
No. Dude, you got to watch Fringe.
Everyone says that. Everyone says the first season's terrible.
First season's not terrible. First season is sort of creature of the week, but sets up some backstory. And you're kind of wondering, are they ever going to, like, is this all going to come to something? Yeah, it comes to something. And you feel like when it does come to something, you feel like you've gotten to know the characters so well because you got to know them through more mundane shit that when it goes batshit insane, you still have some grounding with their personalities, and that becomes really important. Is it going to spoil things if I at least, like, you know, the one thing?
You're telling me to watch it, and then you're telling me to spoil it.
I'll just tell you, like, I'm in, like, because Suki was trying to convince me as well to watch it. She watched the whole thing. It's my girl. You were like, yes, you got to watch it. You got to watch it. We're like, I'm like halfway through season 2, and I'm like, all right.
Oh, dude, it's just like you're halfway through season 2. That's where they're just starting to turn the volume dial, and they're going to, like, start cranking it up from there.
Does it go to 11?
Yes, it goes to 11.
That's from what I'm getting experience. Yes,
actually, it goes to an entirely different number from a whole other world. So it's kind of crazy.
Managed to get it in there, guys.
So what's crazy about this whole thought is that what I think would be really cool was something you brought up, and I know it would be really, really, really challenging to figure out how to do, and it's maybe not something we could do in this current, you know, technology. is wouldn't it be fun to have games that really explored that idea more strongly of – because we're all about – so we're really like emergent gameplay, right? That's something over the last few years that we've really started to get excited about. It's like what happens when I just get turned loose in a game world with systems and get to do whatever the hell I want to? Well, what if we could take that a step further and project our character avatars into other historic or futuristic versions of the world we know? I think that's a really cool idea. I think that's a really, really cool idea, you know, to go explore, like, what would have happened if the Industrial Revolution had gone steampunk? Like, instead of just playing in a steampunk world, what happened if it had gone steampunk and we're, like, there influencing and, like, the world develops out of that? And I think it would be really – obviously, it's a generation of development and tech further down the road to be able to have this dynamically being created world on top of that. But it would be really cool.
I haven't finished AC3 yet, so I don't know what happens. But from what I can tell, the DLC that they were trying to sell me at GameStop, George Washington becomes a tyrant king.
Say what?
So that's what – evidently you have to assassinate George Washington because he's a tyrant king in the DLC.
Is that real?
That's what they were trying to sell me at GameStop.
No.
By the way, I was telling that story of what I thought would be really cool in games out loud, I suddenly had this image as if I was standing there talking to Peter Molyneux. I don't really know why.
He's the guy who's crazy enough to try it. But Jeff and I were talking about how he finished, and I'm in the middle of reading the Stephen King book, 11, whatever it is, 63.
It's the date that JFK was assassinated.
Right. And the whole book is about time travel, trying to go back and stop Oswald from killing JFK.
Wow.
And the way the rules, I won't go into them now. I recommend the book. It starts off with a hell of a bang. Really, really cool sci-fi concept. But the way the world the rules work in this time travel novel reminded me a lot of a video game, because it's almost like you can save your game and go back to – and he keeps changing the same bits over and over till he gets it right.
Right. Well, I mean, the gist of it is there's a portal into the past, and every time you go through the portal – you stay there for as long as you want. Time passes in the past much slowly, more slowly than it does in the future. And when you come back, and then if you go back into the past again, everything that you did resets.
Yeah, you always come back to the past to the same point. So every time you go back to the past, it's that point, and it erased everything you did the last time. Right. So in a lot of ways, it works like a video game where, you know, you start over at the first level, and you can keep trying it over. I think it'll be a really fascinating concept to try to work into a game where there's all these different permutations, and every time you do a certain series of things, you go back like Groundhog Day to, you know, having undid what you did.
Did you could apply that against a Metroidvania and make a really, really cool game?
Yeah.
Anyway, enough side thoughts. So what do you want to do since you're like all interested in other things that you do in Assassin's Creed 3? What do you want to do in Grand Theft Auto 5? Because there's a huge...
I need to change my pants.
I think you'll be doing that in Grand Theft Auto 5. Huge information dump out now in the latest cover story of Game Informer. And obviously, we don't want to steal their thunder entirely. If you want to see the imagery, I know NeoGAF was being really good about taking down the images and making sure that if people wanted it, they go back to the story. It's good for Game Informer. They obviously put a lot of work into this. I don't even know where to start. How about the size of the world? Well, I guess we're talking about side missions. How about the side missions?
So it's going to bring size. It's how you use it.
They're going to bring back. True. It looks like they're obviously taking pages from a number of their games. So one of the things that that was cited was the idea of random missions, like you have in Red Dead Redemption. So here the idea.
I like that.
The things they talked about. Maybe you have deals like hitchhikers and muggings. I mean, you sort of already had that to a degree in Grand Theft, right? Because you could.
But not like this.
Yeah, not to the degree that it was in Red Dead.
I mean, not to the degree it was in Red Dead.
Yeah. I think this is a great direction to be going, and it's something I've been thinking about a lot as I've been playing AC3 in the shadow of having played Guild Wars 2, which is I want these games to work less like a series of quest hubs and more like Guild Wars 2 works, which is I'm out in the world, I'm wandering around, I'm exploring because that's the carrot on the end of the stick, and then stuff happens to me that I get caught up in. Mm-hmm. I think that is such a more interesting way to handle open world, and it seems like this is that half step toward that kind of a theme.
Would you say, that, I mean, if I'm listening, right, that maybe there's like a – that when you now that you've played Guild Wars 2, it sort of highlights for you too the incongruity of I'm in an open world with all these things to do, but you want to stick me down a line of a path to go do a specific set of prescribed things, which is not doesn't work in harmony.
It's one of the things I like least about Rockstar games. You know, think about Red Dead, and what you're doing is, well, I've got these missions from, you know, Joe Bob. I can't remember any of the characters' names right now, but whatever. Joe Bob, you know, send me on a series of missions. And on my map, there's, you know, Marianne can send me on a series of missions too. So I either go to one or two, one or the other of those. Do I mix and match it? Do I follow one quest all the way to the end and then do the other one?
Or do I just not do any of that and go off hunting? Or do I, you know what I mean? Like,
rather than making that the decision point, like live in the world and be in the world and do things and then have situations come up like in Guild Wars 2 where I'm moving through space and things are happening around me that I get caught up in. I think that's a much more organic way of it happening and much, much more interesting.
But does that doing something like that eliminate the ability for players to really just go out in the world and play? I mean, even Grand Theft Auto 4 had a thing where you could basically say, okay, don't give me any more missions for now. I'm going to just
turn off my cell phone.
Go horse around in the world. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's what I say is I think that Grand Theft started to take some steps that direction.
Yeah.
And also because it had multiple main quest line quest givers as well. So you were going around and maybe you were working on the Italian mafia thing, or maybe you were going and working for the drug dealer. And you know, you were like bouncing around back and forth between those two, and you could do other things at the same time.
Yeah, and let me also mention the double edge of that sword bums me out, which happens in AC3 as well, is, hey, here's this optional thing you can do, you know, and then you're like, I'm wandering around doing something else, and it goes, ah, your entire colony was wiped out because you didn't see to that soon enough. It's like, oh, well, I didn't realize it was a fucking problem that I thought it was, I could deal with it when I wanted to. I don't like those things of like, hey, there's a convoy coming through. You want to handle that? Or, oh, nope, everyone was slaughtered. And I was like, oh, well, tell me there's some urgency because I don't want that to happen. Well,
you might need a sense of urgency. So let's lay some of the ground level facts that were established about Grand Theft Auto 5. These are out all over the place. The first one about the size of the world is a ridiculous comparison. So it's described as this rendition of Los Santos is larger than Red Dead Redemption, San Andreas, and Grand Theft Auto 4 all combined together.
What?
All combined together.
It kind of makes me not want to play it.
No. What are you kidding?
I am kidding. No,
but please have fast travel. That's what I said. Like, please have Redemption, fast travel.
Red Dead Redemption, San Andreas. Remember how freaking big San Andreas was.
But also keep in mind that they're including in this the interior space.
Yep.
They're also including verticality. So the other stat that I heard was if you stack 7 San Andreases on top of each other in terms of verticality, that's the ceiling that you get for the flight ceiling. In
ridiculous.
God. Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Scuba diving. So there's underneath the main landmass too.
Jesus Christ. It's insanity.
Yeah.
It's the scope great. Of the world they're building is – it's completely it's obviously unprecedented and completely outrageous. Just completely outrageous.
I can't even imagine. I mean, just again, relating it to literally playing Assassin's Creed over the last few days and where we've gotten to with design and authenticity in a world building environment type game, and that to be able – just the pure artistry of being able to cobble that together and say, hey, we're building a fucking state.
Yeah.
The Union. We're building it. We're putting it in a game.
I just can't wait until they do a recreation of the planet it's Grand Theft Planet. And it's like, you know.
Grand Theft Forever.
I'm going to Switzerland, you know, get on a plane. And
well, it's Ready Player One.
Yeah.
It's Ready Player One.
So there's 3 main characters, and speaking to your discussion about wanting the story that has some urgency to it, drives you through it, sounds like some of the things that are very action-oriented about what you can do that to keep you engaged, there's 3 main characters. You can switch between them, evidently, at nearly any time. So one of the examples that was given was a heist. Well, actually, it was a extraction of a hostage situation from some cops, or they had one of your someone you're trying to get break loose from the cops, right?
Yeah.
So as you're going in, and the by the way, the three guys, it's 3 guys, all men, which we can talk about in a second, Michael, Trevor, and Franklin.
Bros before hoes.
Yeah, evidently they didn't see the election results, I guess. they're being patiently oblivious.
No, they just know who their audience is,
I guess. So they were talking about this. They went, the sequence of events happens, and you were able, during the course of the action in this sequence, to switch between the three characters depending on what you wanted to do. They each have, like, their own motivations. They have their own personality. They have their own specialties. So one of them might be, for instance, a sniper who's hanging back to provide overwatch. And so you might play one guy who rappels down the side of a building, and then when you get to that climactic moment when you go smashing through the window, you can either smash through the window and be right there in the room and be in the thick of that action, or jump back to the guy who is playing sniper overwatch and now be in the position of watching your team inside the building trying to protect them.
Does that mean all three of my dudes are going to be constantly riding around the car together? And if I jack a motorcycle, it's going to be an awkward three-dude motorcycle ride?
Sidecar.
Sidecar!
Sidecar!
Epic.
One of the things that is interesting about this is when you're out in the rest of the world, there was also indication that you'll be able to switch between characters, and that your character, whichever characters you're not playing, would still be going about their business, whatever that is. So they're going to have to also develop a free world AI that's a little bit more advanced than just the AI that would be in Enemies, to be like, okay, when I'm playing Franklin, well, then what are Michael and Trevor doing? I mean, Michael and Trevor, they have their own motivations. They have their own personalities. They have all these.
You like, do not what, want to leave now, Michael and Trevor alone by themselves.
I know.
Together.
Now they haven't said a thing about multiplayer yet, other than that they're pleased with the way that it's coming along. But hello.
Co-op.
Like that. Oh, my God.
Well, yeah.
Come on,
it's three characters.
It's so
obviously,
good.
It's three characters. You have to be at this point assuming that it's going to be a co-op play, right?
I know.
Think that would make the game entirely more fun for me.
So much more fun.
Because I think like
so
that
much
would,
more fun.
I'd call up people. Be like, hey, let's play.
Yeah.
Because I'm imagining like, oh, I'm playing as Franklin. Like, oh, I told Trevor to go do this mission and so-and-so to go do this mission. And I expect progress. But if it's like, I have my friends, and what if we all can go do our separate missions, come back together, and like I did this one myself. Like, oh, snap, I did this over there in the
How
world.
How about this? The interface for connecting with people and things inside the game for Grand Theft Auto 4 was your cell phone.
Your actual cell phone?
Was the cell phone in the game.
Oh.
What if in 5
oh,
it's
I
your,
see
what if in 5 it's your cell phone?
What you
if,
mean your
what
actual
if in 5?
Cell?
What if in
you're
5?
You're breaking my brain. what are you saying, Garnet? I want to be so excited, but I don't know what you're saying yet.
So look.
I get what you're saying. I think that would be cool.
Is that what he's saying? They have a persistent server that's sitting out there with your player presence, right? You come in on the game and you're connected into the internet, right? So now the persistent server in the cloud, wherever it is, talks to my client locally in my house and says, hey, he's just logged back in again. But that cloud server could still be connected through another interface to the client that's running on my phone. This is just like the same size as Smart Glass does, right?
Yeah. Convergence.
Yeah. I think that'd be awesome.
That would be pretty awesome.
Which means that even if I wasn't in the game at any given time, I could still be interacting with everybody in the game through my cell phone, just as if I like for the game where it's so closely tied together, I could see that being one of the ones that gets over the hump of like people don't giving a shit about it and be like, oh crap, I've got my Grand Theft Auto 5 app open and I'm messing around with it all the time and seeing what people are doing and like interacting with people in the game. I mean, they could even go like to some like maybe they won't do this, but they could even go to the ridiculous extent using VoIP of being able to call people on their Grand Theft Auto phone. It's not unquestionable, right? It's like it's not unreasonable to think that I could be in the game, like in the game, and then call you on my phone, but instead of calling your number, Jeff Cannata, I call you through a VoIP connection through my Grand Theft Auto phone.
I want to be excited about this, but tell me how that's better than
it's not better. It's just it's immersive. It's like it's getting this whole
bringing
like,
your real world.
Because as you were saying, and I was like, you could text me through the game, or so, you could just text me.
So you can be at work and get a call, and you're like, hello.
Hey, Nico, let's go bowling.
You're right. You're right. You're right in that it is all stuff that obviously duplicates the exact same shit. I could do all that stuff. It's all about like building the immersion factor of it. And because I would be inside a game client at that time, then I can start as a game designer data mining all the stuff that I'm doing in there and also have hooks into the fictitious part. So I can bring the fictitious part into that experience through the phone that I can't do if you're just doing it on your own.
Yeah.
That's definitely an interesting idea. I'm sure someone's – we're going to see a lot more crossover like that. We have to.
And this game just happens to be uniquely well-suited to it. And, you know –
because it takes place in the real world in our time.
Right. It takes place in the real world in our time. They've already established, like, the cell phone as their –
as a metaphor.
As their, yeah, as their metaphor for – yeah. So it's, like, tied in pretty well.
Well, and they've got a user base right out of the gate for this. So, you know, be a fertile ground to try something like that.
So one of the issues that's already sort of cropped up is people are like, well, why is it three dudes? Why is it three dudes and two of them are white guys? Like, I don't know. What's your feeling about this? I think it would be – I do think it would be great to see some more diversity. I think it would have been awesome, really, for them to have a female character. If they didn't feel like it fits their narrative, that's fine. But look, I mean, there's a ton of women who play games, number one. So just to ignore them completely is sort of at least going to get some attention, number one. And then number two – why not bring that in? There's a lot of interesting – I suspect – I'm interested to hear what you think. I suspect that their concern was how do we bring a female character into this really rough, crass world of Grand Theft Auto that we've created and not have her be like this really, you know, slutty, terrible –
you think they give a shit about that? It doesn't seem like they
care. I think if their first female character was that character, that they might worry about that, yeah.
Really? Because it didn't seem like they worried about that with their first black character. Like, they threw him into a pretty stereotypical...
Yeah.
You know?
CJ was badass, though.
I'm not saying... And the female probably would be badass, too. I'm just saying that I don't think that that's...
So your point is they could have done it and risked it, and then we would have said whatever her name was is badass, and we would have liked her.
Well, but I mean... Well... In fairness, like, San Andreas was... They were taking a very specific angle on... Los Angeles and on that character and on LA gang culture and right. That sort of stuff. So, I mean, I can sort of see that. I agree with you, Garnett. I think it would be great if they figured out a way to marry that universe with a strong female protagonist.
Already marriage. Already but, one female character. And we're already talking marriage.
I know. Well, I'm an eager guy, I guess. but no, seriously, like that is the trick is like, how do you get – I mean, how do you take a character that could very easily be this stereotypical or slutty or, you know,
I don't know. Yeah, but see, they've already – that has been tackled in movies before.
Yeah.
Right? And, like, my first thought is, like, if they were worried about that concern, I probably would have taken and made that character or her into, like a mob boss, right? You've seen it in the sense of, like, she's classy. She holds her own. But she can get down and dirty. But she didn't have to be slutty at all. Like that. Like she's more of a higher level person. And then in that case, you could take all her guys and make those like your main little runner.
Yeah.
Well, like Franklin, Trevor,
Elizabeth Torres from Grand Theft Auto 4, female, strong character, drug kingpin. You know, like definitely not your stereotypical what you would expect.
Like the girl in the ad with the lollipop.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I really wish they did. That would have been cool. I think. It's not the sole reason, but it's one of the reasons I plan on playing the Vita Assassin's Creed.
Really?
Yeah.
Just check because, out what, like a female assassin's
yeah,
like?
I would like – I think that would be cool. I want to support a game that's like, you know, thinking socially out of the box, you know. And they're trying to take – they've said they're taking that character and portraying slavery and all this other stuff realistically. So I think it should be interesting.
You know, they also ticked the boxes, as I would say, better driving, better shooting, better melee fighting. I mean, I don't know at this point how much you can take from that because what are you going to say? I mean, that's sort of like ticking down the list of complaints that people have ever leveled against Grand Theft Auto. Oh, the driving's not good enough. Well, the driving's better this time.
Well, they did specifically say, though, that it was about a stickiness to the road. And I think they nailed or got better with the car weight and how – things Bodie. Felt.
I'm saying they hit the right talking points.
Yeah.
They hit the right talking points, which I'm not really surprised by. Right. I still would like to really have the controller in my hand and feel like it really actually is different. I don't think this is the first time they probably tried to improve the driving physics in the Grand Theft Auto game.
Nope. Definitely not.
It's a marketing beat. Just marketing talk.
It does sort of sound like that, right? It does sort of sound like a marketing
However,
beat.
Being able to douse one of those vehicles with a can of gasoline and light that fucker on
the
fire.
The gasoline trail thing sounds ridiculously awesome.
Oh, my God.
Like, only when you hit 88 miles an hour, though.
No, but Jeff, tell him about it. Did you hear about this? This is really cool.
Go ahead. So you can take a gas can, dump it all over a car, and then create a gas trail. Drop a Zippo in there, and it basically the flame trails up to the car, light ignites the tires, ignites the body, and eventually the gas tank, and the thing will blow up. But it's like that is that's just
awful. It's just like walking away
now,
off the mic.
I hope that like I can, that can be like, oh, go murder this guy. Like that's like I'm just going to go over there and be like, oh, he's sitting in his car? I have this. This will be a short mission. Just douse your shit while he's in there. Lock him in there.
Right.
This is going to be just
sorry. Like, you're going to do it right.
Yeah. Do not fucking piss Jason off.
Seriously. If you do, don't sit in your car.
Seriously. We can't go to the drive-thru. We might get stuck in line. I don't know what's going to happen. Last few things we'll wrap up here. Let's see. The main missions, one of the things that they said would be a big part of the game are heists.
Yes.
So I like this idea of heists.
I do too.
That sounds pretty cool. It's like the idea of like, you know, maybe
especially if you have creativity on how you can handle some of them.
And co-op.
The motherfucker.
You guys in the co-op. I mean, it's not just announced. Not gonna be co-op. Sorry.
I mean, with heists, like the game heist, wasn't it? Or there was some game where you played as like robbery. You're robbing.
The PlayStation game.
Yeah. Okay. Heist. Like that was not as much fun single player, but or playing by yourself. But when I played with friends, like yeah, hell yeah. Well, go over there. Like, we see they're coming. Like, please, don't die. Don't die.
Three Leaf Clover, the heist mission, the multi-stage heist mission from Grand Theft Auto 4 was, like, probably the best mission in the entire game. Like, yeah. it was really, really well
developed. And the good thing about heists in co-op is that they're a very easy and natural way to encourage co-op, good co-op play.
I just hope that they throw some Easter eggs in there and give me the mask of Hotline Miami or the mask of Heist. Like, that would be awesome. I would be a chicken head and just fucking go.
For your other side missions, you'll get to do things like yoga.
Hell yeah. I mean, what?
What?
Downward facing dog.
Wait till you see Franklin get his yoga on. Or as Andrew pointed out, well, of course, they got to do something to support the Kinect.
Oh.
I was like, oh, shit. That's hold on. Up. Namaste. Yeah, it's okay. I got to go kill some motherfuckers.
I'm one with my chi. Now to take you out.
Oh, a full 18-hole golf course, though. So
yes.
Pretty interesting.
Really?
Yeah.
And tennis.
So many mini games.
Yeah. Golf, tennis, triathlons. It's
so rad.
I know. Well, and I just got to say, I don't know about you guys, but there are very few games that give me that day before Christmas feeling that I had when I was 10. And
oh, this is
it. Grand Theft Auto, man. It's just one of those. They fucking know how to get me.
Well, you would not believe the emotional high that would go around the 8th floor back when I worked at Ziff between 1UP and EGM and OPM when Grand Theft was in the house or when we were going over to this weird demo space that Rockstar had over on Columbus in San Francisco to see the game. Like, there was just this crazy, raw, enthusiastic excitement. Like, the place would be a buzz like no other time. Really, like, there's just like something about, especially like after three, it was just like that. Three and then Vice City, and then after that, that series was launched like into the stratosphere.
I think Vice City was already, it was already in the stratosphere.
It was already getting there, but man, Vice City, shit, man. I have the sentimentality for the 80s.
Right.
So that's coming out on iOS now.
Vice City is?
Yeah.
Huh.
How's
that going to work?
Well, the same way the other ones have.
Yeah,
it'll GTA be like
3 came out.
Oh, it did? Just yeah. Virtual
yeah.
6?
Yeah, yeah. Virtual yeah. Gas and sticks.
I didn't know the 3 was out on that.
Every once in a while, they run a little sale. You know?
It's yeah, they even knock it down to like 99 cents.
Yeah.
I would not want to play that game with virtual sticks.
You're right.
You're right.
I mean, it's not really. Yeah, you're right. It's not great with virtual sticks.
Well, you don't have to use virtual sticks for Need for Speed Most Wanted or Forza Horizon. And when we come back on the other side of this, we'll launch into a little racing games, which have great driving engines, but not so great fighting engines. seems only appropriate with the cloudy, gloomy skies.
We didn't get to the best part. Dum.
You want the build up? The build up is like
when he gets on the fucking piano and he's on the ship and it's awesome and I'm watching MTV and I'm young and my whole future's ahead of me.
Yeah, okay, that was sorry about that.
We just all air guitared and like sounded like dying cats. Yep. It was awesome. Oh, by the way, proper's to Jeff Mattis over there, who is in his third Iron Man game of XCOM, even if he does get me fucking killed, evidently, every team.
I know. Sometimes when the Iron Man, you're in the Iron Man mode and, you know, there's an errant bullet or laser blast.
I think he runs me down the middle of the street. He's like, look at the dumbass.
Okay. I don't think anybody does that in Iron Man mode.
No, yeah. My strategy is like, okay, new mission. All right. Garnet, go see what's.
All right, scout.
Go see what's around that corner.
Go over there. I think there might be something up there.
Yeah, the only problem is in Iron Man that would only work once. Yeah. You know, like you'd be like, no. I'm sorry. That's nothing personal.
The other news that came out of that is evidently Jeff Kanata always winds up being a support character, which is nice. I think that's a nice reflection of his, you know, cheery and supportive personality.
That's right.
Yeah.
If you ever need a med pack, Jeff Kanata is always a few hexes just too far away.
Yeah. He's set with the med packs. So let's see. We've talked about Forza Horizon before, and now we're going to talk some about also Need for Speed Most Wanted, which I played both of them. And I guess the first thing I have to do is sort of eat a little hat because I've been all over the board with Forza Horizon. So I went back to Forza Horizon the last 2 days after playing Need for Speed over the weekend for a while, and it convinced me that I was too hard on Forza Horizon last time we talked about it on the show, but still not as high on it as I was after the first demo. I'm not making any sense, am I? Jeff Kanata's looking at me like, you are nuts.
You like it or no like it?
I do like it. I think that my assessment at the end of it is that as much as Forza Horizon and Need for Speed look like very similar games on the surface, they're very different games. They are surprisingly different games. And if anything, the funniest or most ironic part of it all is that Forza Horizon feels way more like Need for Speed to me than Need for Speed Most Wanted does.
Whoa, really?
I mean, way more like Need for Speed. So, like, Need for Speed Most Wanted is Burnout Paradise 2. Period. End of discussion. Yeah. Like,
the only thing it's missing is the ability to switch cars quickly and not have as many load screens.
Yeah, there's no pretense about it at all, which is fine. I loved Burnout Paradise, and it's an awesome game. And we can talk about that in a second, but there is at no time does it do what Forza Horizon does really well. So Forza Horizon is about driving the cars. Forza Horizon is about getting in really cool cars from, you know, like mid-range sporty cars through ridiculous exotics and taking them out on highways and driving them at batshit insane speeds. And
so Forza Mechanics, just with
Yeah.
I mean, spirited driving.
And one of the things I think that was really huge that helped me enjoy it is someone on Twitter recommended turning off some of the assists.
Oh, yeah.
Which I had on because I was treating it as a more casual game. Actually, the assists seemed to just sort of botch the whole physics system of the game. Because once I turned, like, traction control off especially, suddenly I felt like I was in control of the car again. Don't ask me why. I don't...
When I play, I play a lot of racing games, and I play F1. I turn off all the assists. And, like, Arnie, one of our guys at Naughty Dog, he was like, are you serious? Like, how can you control the car with a Formula One car as well?
See, Formula One car, I would ask that, because I played Formula One, and I can't really play it with all the shit off.
I don't know.
I have to use the ABS at least.
No. Oh, no. You can't. No.
Turn off the targeting computer, Luke. You don't need it.
Trust your feelings, Jason.
That's...
I can't.
You just gotta feel it. You just like, I think, I don't know, when you, like a Formula One game, you're super sensitive, right? When I play like Need for Speed, I literally drive those cars like they're go-karts. And when I drive a go-kart, I don't even need a brake. You just let off the gas and it brakes enough for itself and then you just keep turning. Like I stay on the gas.
So have you played Horizon at all?
No, I haven't.
So the thing about Horizon that I think you would like Horizon, and I think the thing that I realized when I was not pushing hard on it to log a bunch of hours and feel like I was pushing through stuff is like the moment of awesomeness in Horizon is when you're out on the highway listening to the radio and seeing how fast the car you're in will go while weaving through traffic. And
so it's like every person who's like, it's a, you're like, oh, I have this new car, like a real life new car. I want to go take it on the highway and just go.
Yes.
It's like that.
Yes, and then there are races to go do, and the races are of varying. I mean, I still have like not as in love with the handling model when I get into the races, because then it's like, do I want to race or not? And the other thing to don't underestimate is how much of a role the Forza engine plays inside the game. And so instead of, I think like maybe I was fighting it too much, like I was trying to force it to be a more casual game than it is, but it can still be a casual framework with a more serious driving game layered on top of it. Yes, Jeff? What? What were you going to say?
I missed it.
What?
I had a small window to do a joke and I missed it, and so we're going to keep going.
All right, that's fine.
I hate it when that happens.
You're like, And so one of the things that's really cool about their ethos of approaching that is that while wrecking in Forza slows you down some and is an impediment, it's not a
end.
It's not an end.
Yeah, you're not like, oh crap, restart the race kind of thing.
Right. Well, you might have to restart the race, but depending on what you're doing, you might restart the race or you might want to reset. But in Burnout, it's all about, I mean, in Need for Speed Most Wanted, wow, it's that much of the game.
Yeah.
It's like in Need for Speed Most Wanted, it is about the wrecking, and there are so many times that you wreck, and it is a more staccato experience of drive real fast wreck, drive real fast wreck,
yeah,
drive
yeah,
real
yeah,
fast
yeah,
wreck,
yeah.
drive real fast wreck. And yes, you can get through races, and that's cool, but at the end of the day, what's really cool about the game is you're out there smashing people. That's the other thing is, in Need for Speed, in Forza, I'm so messed up thinking about the games. In Forza, you're trying to race and make good passes and, you know, run a crazy inside line on a sweeping corner and get a little bit in the shoulder, but have just enough edge to get past a car and slingshot around them. And in Need for Speed, you're going
to take down.
Yeah, it's a takedown.
Take down.
And you're going to come up and you're going to nitro into that motherfucker and bunch him into the wall.
I think one thing that makes it easier in Need for Speed to do something like that, or two things, actually. One, there's very little, and then I should probably say that I'm playing this solely on my Vita because I feel like it works really well playing an arcadey type of racer on a mobile, a portable device. There's very little car damage, right? When I play Need for Speed, so I'm not like, oh man, I want to keep this car pristine. It's gonna stay fairly pristine anyways. And
because of the technical limitation of the Vita, like, right?
Probably,
because you're not knocking the bumper off and like seeing the windows crack. Like,
yeah.
Which, by the way, when you play the PS3 or 360 version, it does all that stuff.
Yeah. Well, then I'm happy I'm not playing, because like that makes me not really worry too much about the car. Like when I play Gran Turismo or Forza, like I want to keep my car pristine because I can see it like falling apart. And that, for some weird car thing in my brain, it just makes me not want to see my cars fall apart.
Nothing weird about that. That was the whole Gran. That's the old Gran Turismo argument.
Yeah, I think I had a second thought, and it's like escaping me. And when I think about it, I'll bring it back up.
So,
I've been playing a bunch. I wanted to ask you about Forza's multiplayer, because it's such a huge component of Burnout now with Bacon.
Yep.
That, you know,
with Bacon.
Yeah, Burnout now with Bacon. It's Hot Pursuit, Cops.
Oh,
wow. Oh, wow. Seriously, I was like, what?
Dude, I was like, pin drop in the room. Like, what the hell is he talking about?
I know. It's like, oh, that's going over like a little
bit. What just happened here?
Yeah. So how was the multiplayer for Forza?
So we talked about multiplayer in Forza, and I think maybe that was the other thing, is I got a little caught up in it. Is multiplayer in Forza, it does have a free roam game. Mm-hmm. And that's at the bottom of the list. The top of the list, though, the default thing is that it puts you into playlists, which I guess would be most closely aligned with sort of like the multiplayer of Killzone, where you're playing it does like a race, puts everybody in the race, it like you pick a car and then it picks a map and it says, okay guys, go race this race, and then you come out and there's a little intermission, it's like, okay guys, go race this race, okay guys, go race this, and in between each race you're picking car class, everyone in the group is voting on car class, much as you would have vote on maps, so instead of voting on maps you're voting on car class.
That's kind of cool.
And based off car class, then it picks an appropriate race for you to go race in, and it's okay.
I like that,
kind of levels cool. The playing field, at least it does. You know, mechanically wise with the cars, right?
And multiplayer in Most Wanted is, like, awesome. It's really, really fun. It's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. Because as we talked
about... I find surprising. Like, I have little desire to play legitimate multiplayer. I'm always, like, looking around and see a little stat bubble of, like, oh, this person's gone this much faster than me through this speed race.
Oh, the async stuff.
So yeah, that's still sort of single player. Dude, multiplayer in
speedless...
I see your shit all the time, and I'm always like, I gotta take down Garnet. Fucking
speedless are probably the series, like, you know, best invention in a while. Because it's like in multiplayer, you get a speed list, which is either randomly or picked by the host, five events. And it's anything from here's a race to okay, and then you race to the next race point. You can take each other out the whole time, like in between events. And then they might have you do something like something weird. Like in between two races, you might have like to pass each other in a pipe in an industrial complex, and you basically have to get like three near misses each.
Actually,
and so it's this cooperative thing.
I should say that Killzone 3 analogy probably fits Most Wanted better than it fits Forza, because Forza maybe is more like a Gears of War map playlist. Yeah, like a map playlist.
Yeah.
Whereas Most Wanted, like you're describing, is like the thing about Most Wanted. JC, you should play Most Wanted because the multiplayer in that game is really awesome.
It's really good.
It's really weird because ways in which you do and public matches are really fun because it is just this weird clusterfuck of free-for-all.
You
hop in and you're all driving around for a minute and then the map then like it comes up on screen. It says, okay, drive to the meetup spot. And everybody is racing as fast as they can to get to the meetup spot. Of course, you're scoring points all the time, so you're trying to drive fancy.
Right.
You're also trying to take down everybody else because you're getting scores for that. You're trying to not be taken down and get to the spot wherever the meetup spot is. So then you get to the meetup spot. Once everyone gets to the meetup spot, it then tells you, okay, we're going to do a race. So sometimes it's just a race. Sometimes it's a team race and you're paired with other people on there. Sometimes it's a ridiculous skill contest. Like they'll send you to a spot in the environment and you'll have to jump off of a ramp and land on top of a building and accumulate time by sitting on top of the building. But of course that sounds easy, but once one person is sitting on top of the building where the ramp lands,
you gotta like knock them off.
The next person comes up and hits them and knocks them off. So now you're getting into like these crazy weird contests.
Which is why it's so much fun.
Yeah, oh no, it is.
I love that. It feels more like
hanging
out with your friends skateboarding or something.
And it totally helps break up the pace so you're not just doing race after race after race. And like you get these little like messing around, goofing around. It's
the skateboarding analogy is perfect.
Yeah, it's or playing horse or something with your friend, like between basketball games, you know, like, yeah, we're, you know, trying to get, you got your five? Not yet. Okay, well, let's play a little, you know, this pickup game of something else. It's that hanging out at the park mentality, you know.
Playground games.
Yeah, playground games.
Playground games, playground rules kind of thing.
Well, and like finishing a race and then flipping your car around and going back in the opposite direction just to wreck as many people
as
you can.
That's
why I'm saying they're so very different games is because the mentality of playing them is just – it's very different, right? Like one of them is like going to a skateboard park or playing basketball with your friends and you're all about crashing into people and it's like just this crazy free-for-all. And though it has real cars and there are definite differences to, you know, hopping into a big, you know, Maserati Grand Tour
versus an Atom.
Right, versus an Atom. You'll feel the differences. It's still not about the car so much as it is about like, what can I do with this crazy thing that I just put myself in?
Whereas
in Forza, it's very much about like, oh, I want to go get in a muscle car. Oh, I want to go get in a Koenigsegg because I want to go drive that car to drive that car. Whereas in Need for Speed, I feel like I want to go drive that car because I want to go do this
it's
with it.
It's a means to an end.
Yeah.
I want to go.
Well, I think that's been established a while ago with Need for Speed. Like, I feel like they've never really had like a realistic, like a simulator type of racing game.
Oh, no.
So because of that, like Forza has gone through this path of like, all right, we're gonna go ahead and compete with Gran Turismo. And how they've gone about that, they have these legitimate cars. So then when they go and say, oh, we're gonna make like a little bit more arcadey version of our game, you still have all that core functionality, right? That like you want, like I would drive those cars. Like if I was literally just driving Forza, I just happened to be on a road that I'd have no idea about. Like it's harder to memorize and all this other stuff.
Comparatively, there's interesting things back and forth between the two of them. For one thing, when I'm in Forza, while it does make sense there, and I think it would still make sense in Most Wanted as well, I really like the voice-assisted GPS. It's also a really big world. But you know, it makes it to where like I'm keeping my eyes up on the road instead of looking up at the minimap all the time.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
And that's really a nice feature. Great. But like the much bigger difference for Need for Speed is that tap on the D-pad to the right – which like immediately brings up this laundry list of things to go do. You never are wondering what to go do.
I'm like obsessed.
Which of these things do I go do? There's so many freaking things to go do.
I'm at most wanted car number 4.
Yeah.
Or something like that. And I'm like obsessed. I'm obsessed with if I ever see anything of like auto blog or whatever I believe it is like recommended, like I have to take them down. Have to take them down because I know that's something personally someone else did that I know. Everything else, like, yeah, that little mini menu was like one of the best features.
That recommendation
engine in and out.
Good.
Yeah.
And that crosses over to your PS3 friends, not just Vita friends.
Yeah.
And are you finding it to be doable to take down people who've accomplished things on PS3 taking
yeah,
it down with
because,
your Vita?
Because it's so arcadey.
Yeah.
It's totally obtainable. Yeah. Right? It's not like, oh man, this person has a legitimate controller versus my all in one built controller. I can't do this. Like, no. I think there's an advantage doing it on Vita than there is on PS3. But I will get the PS3 version and find out.
Cool.
I, like, seriously try it out and see what's the difference and see if I like that more or not. But right now I'm feeling more excited to check out Forza just to make a legitimate comparison.
So conversely, when I go to Forza, the old school like map with points of interests that I have to go like move my cursor over and set as a target waypoint and then go to the waypoint and like hunt up things, it's just not nearly as well done. And as a matter of fact, there are like messages that come up. And last night I had like 3 or 4 messages that were like, I don't remember exactly what the event was, but it would be like, so-and-so did this. Would you like to challenge that right now? And I clicked yes. And it wasn't setting a point for me. And I don't know if I was supposed to go find it in the map or if it just wasn't working right. So some of them worked. Mm. Like some of them like they do speed challenges. They have like speed cameras. It would say like Louis the Cat, beat your speed on the speed camera. And you clicked it and it would like put you a marker and plot your GPS to that. But others weren't procking properly for some reason, like races and stuff. I don't know. I think that part of my other problem with Forza was, did you ever play Test Drive Unlimited or Test Drive Unlimited 2?
Yes.
They were like so far ahead of their time.
Oh yeah,
and
I mean, I think they got, I think they just got marketing overwhelmed, right? Like they weren't marketed as well as the other ones,
and they
weren't
as technically competent. You know, like I was always had trouble with some of the driving physics in that. But the whole idea of being out, and I did not play the second one nearly as much as I played the first. The first one took place on the island of Hawaii or the island of Oahu, and like driving around on the island and like. If you were connected to the internet when you started a game, it's just populated real people who were driving in the area around you next to you. So you were driving in a world with some people who were real players. And then you could just start playing with them. Like that was really
like Super Forza.
That's like rad.
Yeah.
That is so rad. And I think that when that wasn't what was happening in Forza Horizon, I was feeling bummed out about it. And then like having to go start a game, multiplayer game, and then it's not like the default to go down to the free roam and start a free roam and then bring my friends in. Yeah, I get that like if I want to do that, that's cool. But if I wanted to just go play, like the whole async thing that Jeff likes, I think it's a really cool idea that even if I'm just in to play async, that someone that I go speeding by, instead of them being an AI with an AI name over it, might be a real person with a real person's name over it.
Yeah, yeah,
like
yeah,
that's
yeah,
a freaking
yeah.
really yeah. cool, like just casual interaction in a game.
Well, and that sort of brings up, like I really like Most Wanted a lot. I mean, I think it's a really fun game, but with the caveat that because it is so multiplayer focused, like with the async stuff, with the online stuff, and the limited number of things you can do on a per vehicle basis, makes the single player experience feel a little bit more hollow, maybe than it could have, than in past games.
I think both single players are kind of hot. Look, they're both the same game. It is. Here are – this is like now – no one has a new idea for racing game for a not racing game, driving game. It's always here are the 10 people you must beat to advance through the ranks to get higher than them.
Well, I mean, the other version is
– the run. That's the other version.
Or hopping.
Yeah. That's somebody trying to innovate on single-player racing game.
Yeah.
And it kind of seems silly.
It did seem so. You're right. Okay. That's a fair point.
I guess I was just mainly comparing it to like the single player of Hot Pursuit, for example, which is very structured. It's very race-based. It's very linear. Every race that you select has a specific car that you have to drive associated with it. And I don't know if that's better or worse, or it's probably just different. But as a result, I don't know. In Most Wanted, I just felt like when I was playing the single player stuff, I just wanted to get back into multiplayer. I didn't really feel as much motivation. I wanted to race against other people as opposed to making my way up the list, which is still fun.
You have no desire to like get those cars though?
No,
like, I want those cars, even though I know it's not going to be that big of a difference versus, you know.
I am, but the way that it's structured is like you find a new vehicle and you pull up the list and there's like five events you can race.
Yeah.
And, you know, things you can unlock for your car. But once you're done, like if you find a vehicle that you really like and you're like, bam, you know, I've done my five races.
You have
first
no affinity
place,
really to keep the car.
Yeah, you're just like, okay, on to the next vehicle and on to the next vehicle. And it, I don't know, it keeps me from having like a center, like a grounded center to the experience in single player.
I just don't think there's a barrier between them anymore. I'm not.
No, that's part of it.
You know, it's
that's
I'm
what
competing with
did.
Well, I'm Autolog. I'm competing with people in a multiplayer-esque kind of a feeling throughout playing by myself. You know, I'm constantly I can finish a race and perfectly well move on to the next race, but because I didn't beat Garnet's score, I'm going to play that again. You know.
See, it's funny you should say that because at the end of every race in Forza, so let's say you finished a story mission in Forza. You get to the end of a story mission in Forza and it'll find the next person on your friends list who's done it better than you and say, okay, you just finished this race against Mary, but would you like to race Jason, who also finished the race against Mary, half a second faster than you as a rival? And if you do, we'll give you extra bounty points. And you know what?
Does it bring in the
brony points?
Brony points.
Does it bring in the ghost?
No, it doesn't bring in the ghost. It doesn't bring in the ghost. It's like, hey, you just like your friend Jason, he beat the same race, but he did a little bit better than you. Would you like to challenge him and win 2,500
bony points?
Brony points.
I guess, like, for me,
I always say no now. It's like, I'm like, you know what? Actually, I don't really care.
Well, you should care, dude.
Sharing is caring.
Yeah. You don't want those brony points?
How's the AI in Forza? Because I feel like the AI in Need for Speed is like incredibly faster than what you can ever actually drive those. In the sense of like when I get in the same car, I can't nearly drive it as fast as the AI is. It's always running away from me.
Well, I think that I wouldn't be surprised to find that they're doing like some rubber banding of some sort in Most Wanted. But I think that fits the sort of play that they have there, right?
Yeah.
Because I think there were times where I definitely felt like after a couple of wrecks, I should have been way further behind the lead car in Most Wanted than I was.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah,
and I'm
that's
like,
true.
How am I this close to this guy? I shouldn't have any prayer to catch up to these guys. I think it's par for Forza. And by that, I mean that it's par for the new Forza, which means that if you are in a line, it's going to do a pretty good job of trying to avoid you, but it's still going to screw up sometimes. But especially if you've established position in the corner, then you can do some very effective blocking in corners. You can do some very effective blocking in corners.
So some like kind of legitimate racing.
And it has a cool day-night cycle. It is pretty neat. It is pretty neat to be like, you know, driving your crazy sled back into the festival set, because you know the conceit for that is like this crazy music festival. But you're driving back into the music festival as sun's starting to set, and they're like, you can see all the searchlights going off, and the sun's like all picturesque orange going over the mountains. And
over the horizon.
For me,
that's kind of cool.
I think because I saw there was like somebody did remove the HUD and did it like a drive, like drive, the movie. And I was like, oh, okay. That's cool. How I actually knew about that.
Well, speaking of HUD, by the way, two things.
Criterion is awesome. Oh, sorry.
Criterion has a beautiful game, but holy shit, there's a lot of HUD in Most Wanted. There's a ridiculous
stuff
everywhere. There's been multiple times where because there's so much garbage HUD on the screen that I haven't been able to even see where the hell I'm supposed to be driving. Like I'm trying to go into a corner and there's like a list of cars over here and there's some other over thing on the left and I'm like, God damn, get all this UI out of my way.
Wait, how are you? What viewport are you driving in? In a sense, are you like on the ground?
Well, there's only two in Most Wanted.
Yeah. I'm driving up like up
I drive
top.
Chase.
Okay, same.
Yeah, I drive Chase. I drive Chase in all these games because I got to be able to see like the setup for the slides and all that kind of stuff. And then the other thing is I realize that it's not maybe where there are as far as bringing in this much detail, but there's no fidelity controls. There's no fidelity adjustments to the controls in Most Wanted. Like I can't adjust the dead zone. I can't adjust the outside edge of the turn, the inside edge of the turn, all those things that are built into a more sim sort of racer. But I kind of would like that because it feels really twitchy.
I wonder if that's because of the way that the, you know, each vehicle has to differentiate itself. Like they can't let you tweak that stuff because having a slightly different dead zone is the difference between driving car A and car
Forza,
B.
Forza is super differentiated. Forza is a sim engine underneath.
No, but Need for Speed. I'm sorry, maybe I was
Need for Speed doesn't have the adjustments. No, no, Forza has a laundry list of things you can adjust to make the steering respond the way you want it to.
Right. But, I mean, the lack of adjustments in Need for Speed is probably due to the fact that it's just not as robust. Like, there isn't enough stuff – as many variables to tweak.
Maybe.
You know,
I think it's also maybe just Criterion feels very strongly that they got the feel right for the way they want the game to be. And that,
I think it's because it's an arcade-y. That's why it feels like Burnout.
But I wish it just had a little more mid-zone, a little more – like, it just deaden it off a little bit.
Hey, dudes.
What?
Sorry to break up the race car party.
No. I have to go, but I wanted to, before we end the segment, before I have to leave and not be around for the rest of the show, I want to do a quick finishing move.
Oh, okay.
Out of time, because I got an incredible amount of positive feedback last week, just people being super supportive and saying just being very complimentary. I've got emails and tweets and forum posts all from really nice, gracious, awesome people who really helped me out and made me feel great. And I want to thank the audience for that. And that.
Did you have a baby?
I don't. No. No. But, you know, I don't. Obviously, I'm not trying to fish for compliments ever. But it is nice to know that people, you know, enjoy.
Really like me.
Also, part B of my finishing move is I know people are probably sick of election talk, so I won't talk too much about it other than the fact that the one thing about this election that no one predicted is that the turnout for young people was better than 2008, went up from 2008. And that's fucking awesome. And it's people like the people who listen to this show. And I think we should all applaud ourselves and be pleased for that, because hooray for giving a shit and caring. And
it's a totally new batch of young people too.
Yeah.
Like, it's not even the same.
It's great. It's very encouraging. Awesome. It makes me proud of
the future.
The future, yeah. Hopefully.
I should have done this section in the third one. I should have done the one that we're going to talk about next, because next we're going to talk about some Elder Scrolls Online.
Oh, you know how I feel about that. Not so much. Not so happy about
it. How about this idea? I want your parting thought on this. There are not going to be any shards. It's going to be one mega server. One server for the entire game, and then the game will intelligently distribute people into population centers based off of their friends lists and what they're doing, all that kind of stuff.
I think that could be cool. One of the frustrations of that sharding of you know, being shuffled off is going, hey, I'm standing next to the giant statue of the golem. Really? I'm standing right there too. I don't see you. Oh, I'm in world 4B. Oh, I'm in world 7L. Well, let's switch over. Which one do you want? You know, that whole discussion. So if it's intelligently doing it based on friends list, that's pretty rad. But I think
the promise.
The idea of one giant thing usually is – it doesn't really matter, because it usually separated by some barrier anyway.
It's not the size. It's what you do with it.
Yeah. All right.
All right, Jeff, fare thee well. Travel well. Jeff is gone next week, so yep, you'll miss him. But he'll be back the week of Thanksgiving, at which time we'll be here for the you'll be here for the PlayStation All-Stars talk. We're having Ariel back then, and she finished Last Story, which she'll be excited to talk about. And then I'll be sort of laying out a little bit, but they're going to talk also about PlayStation All-Stars, because Seth Killian will also be here.
That's awesome. So the Seth Killian.
Love that guy.
It's going to be an awesome show there for your Thanksgiving dining entertainment.
But you guys have a whole lot more show to go, so stick around. But I will take my leave, and I appreciate it. Have a good week, fellas.
Thanks, Jeff.
All right, bye.
Have a good time.
Ciao.
We will be right back on the other side of this. Take me to the river. Drop haven't seen the worst of it yet either. All right, back and ready to roll. So as we were talking about there, Elder Scrolls Online has its first gameplay video along with some developer commentary. And yeah, it's pretty interesting. I think that it puts a stronger foot forward by far than they did over E3.
Yeah.
Jeff, you're not convinced? You're still not convinced?
I mean, it definitely looks better than what they showed at E3. But, you know, well, I mean, I've gone on record before. I'm not a big MMO guy.
Right.
So,
but look, the promise appears to be there of the action combat that you know and love from the Elder Scrolls game brought to you in an online environment.
I mean, I definitely am more intrigued about it than I thought I would be after seeing that trailer.
I thought it was interesting that they went to the trouble, like the lead game designer takes the trouble of, yes, this is left click to attack and right click to block. It's just like the Elder Scrolls. Like, obviously they heard the clamoring about, like, oh, it's just going to be turn-based. And
right. It's going to be left click everything and or whatever, right click everything.
And though I think those were probably beauty shots, I can't imagine it being completely without HUD. It did appear that it was happening, you know, in a pace that would not be, you know, the same of, like, clicking boxes to make
true
skills go off and that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So the Elder Scrolls Online takes place 1,000 years before Skyrim. I guess that's cool. I don't know. Like, does everything have to be like a prehistory?
I don't know. I don't want to say lazy because I think you can do some really interesting stuff with prehistory. I mean, KOTOR is amazing. But like, yeah, it is sort of an easy way to not trip over the fiction that you've already created. You know,
I mean, just go back.
Yeah,
we'll actually make use of it. And the funny thing is, I think like I've sort of I said that as if I have soured on this prehistory idea, and maybe it's just because it's been used a fair amount. Because here, it actually really does make sense. Here you're talking about a game where every time you're in one of their game worlds, they're like bookshelves with tons and tons of books.
Right.
Yeah. It's like, read about all these things that happen. I'm like, I don't really want to read about it. But going back and playing it, okay, that could be kind of cool. And it's not so far back as like KOTOR was, where it's just like a whole other completely different era.
Speaking of which, have they ever compiled all of those texts into a actual physical book that people could like, oh, I want to read, you know, Letters from the Elder Scrolls or whatever. And
I wonder, like, that's probably a lot of pages.
Yeah, but I mean, they got the text. It's just a matter of figuring out how you're going to bind it up and, you know, present it. And
we'll just take down the Amazon.
Volume 1. Yeah, no, right. Yeah. So it would be a lot.
There were people who would buy it, though. People would definitely, it'd be like, I have like small encyclopedia. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, yeah. It's probably way too much, but kind of.
Well, I think they took a definite step forward, and they even went on to reassure. It's funny how much as you like watch that video, which is 9 minutes long, by the way, but does have a lot of good game mechanic in it or gameplay in it. It's really funny how much if you follow the business, you can really recognize like, this is another marketing beat. This is another marketing beat because they get to the end and they're talking about, I think, you know, obviously one of the big complaints that came out against one of its competitors, Star Wars, was that when you get to the end of the game, what do you do? Right? There's like that worry about like, how do you handle end game content? And they take a full 2 minutes in this 9 minute video talking about how, well, when you reach level 50 content, it really opens up. Of course they're going to say that. I mean, what the hell is it? It opens up into what? I don't know.
Yeah.
It blossoms into a beautiful flower for the World Scrolls.
Then the game really starts.
Like, fucking hell. Some bullshit, right?
50 hours of my life.
What was interesting about this, though, is that they did start to talk some more about their PvP system, which to me was very evocative of Dark Age of Camelot. It has like this big sort of faction battle thing where you're going to have sieges of castles, and they were showing how, you know, you can get into it at any level, and there's going to be weapons of siege wars. So you'll be firing like trebuchets and catapults and have these big, massive combats. And I was like, okay, that's kind of neat. And then evidently the goal is to have one member of your faction crowned emperor. And I was like, okay, you know, the other thing that's interesting about this idea is that getting one person crowned emperor, like the amount of ways people like to backstab each other on the internet already, like that's going to be some crazy political, like that might actually resemble the most insane, awful book you've ever read as far as backstabbing. And
how awesome would it be is, once you got elected emperor or whatever, became emperor, if somebody killed you, your character's done. Right? So it's like, so you actually have protect the emperor.
You made it to the ultimate spot.
Yeah. Now,
I'd start killing off members. Like if I know and there's an opportunity to like, oh, I've made it to the upper echelon. Like I'm the boss.
Right.
But everyone else could take me out and like, oh no. Don't even come. Like, you can't. Don't get an arm distance. Like, I will kill you.
By the way, pro tip: if you're thinking about going for emperor, or if you're thinking about like playing in these factions, you don't want to be Hand of the King. That never works out.
No, generally not. No.
That never works out well. Yeah, I think the thing that is undetermined. The thing we know nothing about that holds probably the greatest hand in the fate of this game is how are they going to ever make it work.
Well,
that's really the question, right? Like, so, okay, so you've put together this video and it looks a lot better and you're going to win people over with, you know, you could potentially win people over with, it looks prettier. It looks much more like what we thought an Elder Scrolls game would look like. You know, when that dude jumps off the rock and outcropping. Outcrop.
Where's he going with that?
He jumps off the rock outcropping and does, and he has on like the helm with the horns and he does the barrel roll and he goes running up and swings his sword. You're like, okay, that definitely looks like something I've seen in Skyrim or Morrowind or whatever. So that, all that's solved. Then, okay, you still gotta figure out how to do it and make money because we are, as we've just, was just finally confirmed, November 15th, Star Wars goes free to play.
Yep. And
Honestly,
I think
that's like the bow in the air of the Titanic, right? I mean, it's about to go into the water, right?
True.
I don't know. That's my conjecture is that, as we said when it first was being announced, it was going free to play.
Yeah.
Like by the time it actually hits, which is now, like, does anyone?
Oh
like,
no!
Is
no,
it going to work? Does anyone care?
But think about this, right? You haven't played it yet. You like
Star Wars?
Yeah. You well, say you haven't played it yet, and you're like, oh, I like BioWare.
Yeah.
And I don't want to pay a monthly subscription fee, but I wouldn't mind seeing what yarn they spin in this Star Wars universe, you know, and all the story content is free. So,
right.
You know,
you are going to be able to play up to the current level cap of level 50 with all of the class storylines in the free-to-play model.
Now, that's not going to make the game more profitable.
No.
But I think it will increase engagement. And then, you know, the thinking would be that more people, somebody's going to be like,
know.
Oh, I want to buy a Tauntaun or whatever.
Knowing Star Wars fans, though, I think that if you wanted to play Star Wars, you went out and they had a – remember the initial pop on the game was there. It was then that it didn't sustain itself.
No, it's true. I have heard a couple people say that they're going to go back and – like this was, you know, people that had subscribed for 3 months, like Sean and the Dazzed.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He was basically like, I'm going to go back in and finish the story because I put in 25, 30 hours.
So there's something like, I think might happen. I do think that there will be people who initially played and dropped who will go back now and play for free.
Yeah.
And will play out their storyline. Hell, they might even go play all the storylines. I think that a lot of those folks actually, will that generate money?
No.
I mean, will those folks?
A little bit.
Well, I mean, free to play, what are microtransactions? So what are they selling? Like,
So they
because if you're obviously not selling the story.
They have some of the game locked up, but then their play for making money is cartel coins.
Really?
Yeah. You might think it was a 50 cent game. It's not blood in the sand. No. These are different cards. These are not the cartel coins you're looking for.
God.
And some of the examples of things that you might buy with your cartel coins are, you know, pets.
Okay. No.
A personal throne.
A personal throne.
Yeah.
Can you flush
like,
it?
Actually, I like this goofy-ass image of this person who's like supposed to be like a dark Jedi on this like levitating throne going through Coruscant or whatever. This is like a helm. They have like nasty big helms. Or this is my favorite. You know what a Jedi wants to do? Replace their lightsaber with axes.
What?
Oh, yeah. Badass couple of sets of axes. Look, fuck that awesome lightsaber you got. How about
a couple of
hard steel?
See, Disney's IP or Star Wars IP gets sold to Disney and the whole thing goes to hell.
Dude, I'm watching this video. And they are seriously jocking to me that what I want to do is get rid of my super fucking badass lightsaber, which is the weapon of the Jedi and totally awesome to the lore, and replace it with a couple of generic ass battle axes in my hands. Hand axes.
Because, you know, axes.
Axes.
You got a comeback. They're bringing back.
And worse yet, they think I'm going to spend money to buy virtual currency to go get rid of my cool, awesome lightsaber and buy hand axes.
Now, those axes aren't like some deodorant promotional tie-in or some shit. I mean, like, seriously, that's just – I don't know.
Now, I think it would have been cool as if they made some sort of like – I don't know, like a lightsaber axe.
But like – Okay.
An axe saber.
Like an axe saber.
A light-bladed axe.
That would have been... I would have went for that.
Dude, I'm serious. Like, these look like the most generic Skyrim hand axes ever. It's like here's your cool-looking, you know, Twi'lek Jedi. Look at my badass axes!
From Obi-Wan to Gimli. Like it's like... yeah.
By the way, that'll cost you $2.50.
Oh, no, it won't. Because I'm not buying that shit.
Oh, dear. Yeah, I just don't think that they – I don't know what the right formula for making this work is, but I do know this, and this is from the experience now of like watching mobile games as we start to make mobile games, is that the game wasn't intended and built to be a free-to-play game and trying to
– Make then, it that?
Then, yeah, trying to put free-to-play on top of a game is really difficult because you have to build a free-to-play game the right way, which is to let people play the game and be able to play more and more of the game and be able to play it all the way through free. Because honestly, the person who plays your free-to-play game a ton is way more valuable to you than any amount of money they spend. Because they're the people that are like really into your game and they're bringing more people into the
invested.
Game.
Invested. Well, they will sell your game more than anyone else will.
Any MMO maker right now that is not thinking about that in terms of the long-term roadmap of their game as a contingency plan or something. I mean, you have to, right? You spend so much money on these things and then subscriptions start to fall off and you're like, holy shit, we got to redesign our game.
Yeah.
Like, oh, man.
And look, unless you're Blizzard, making a single-player game of equal scope is a really big risk as well, right? Yeah. I mean, although we did find out that Diablo 3 has sold over 10 million copies. That's a lot of copies
of
Diablo
3. That's a lot of
Diablos. Hey, and did you see the other part of that is that they confirmed there's an expansion coming.
Of course.
I should be lucky enough to live so long.
I know, right? yeah, no joke, really.
It's like, okay, expansion coming for Blizzard for Diablo 3. When's that out? Oh, you know.
It's coming. It's coming.
I didn't have enough chance. This was a story that came out yesterday on Thursday, and I wanted to read more about it because I was wondering, you know, you're not a big fantasy guy, so you didn't. Did you play it? Diablo 3?
No, not at all.
Did you play Diablo 3?
Yeah.
Did you finish it?
No.
See, this is amazing to me.
No. If you could see in the face.
No, in fact, you want to know something weird. I stopped playing it probably a month and a half, 2 months after it came out.
Yep.
About a month after that, I got one of those emails from Blizzard saying, hey, we saw some suspicious activity on your account. I was like, oh, somebody obviously. So they froze my account, but I haven't even bothered to like write in and go, hey, dude, aww, can you unfreeze my account? I will at some point. I just – I don't know. I was never as into it as Jeff was.
Well, Kanata, so. he
was
– I really wanted to get his opinion because – I'm interested about like them talking about an expansion now when I think that, you know, from things I've been reading, like there's still a number of features that people feel like, hey, wasn't this supposed to be in the core game in the first place?
Right.
PvP. Hello. Just,
I wonder what their daily – I mean, they must have some sort of daily active user base big enough to – I mean, with 10 million copies sold, I'm sure they've got people that are playing
it.
Yeah. I mean, so I don't think it's – they would think about, you know, do we do an expansion or not in the same way that somebody else – making a similar type of game might, just because they have that user base. But yeah, it is weird that they're talking about that now as opposed to all this other stuff that they were, you know.
Meanwhile, I've gained like a tremendous amount of sympathy for them in trying to finish a game. It's funny, like we were talking about this actually in the office today. Mm-hmm. When the Grand Theft Auto thing came up and they were describing the size of it. The first thing that came to mind, this is how like messed up like game production gets in your head when you start doing it. First thing that came to mind was like, dude, how the hell do they even write a testing protocol for that shit?
Right.
So for those of you who don't know or haven't kept up, we started a mobile games publishing operation with Gamefly, which I'm the director of publishing for. And there's been some questions. Our first game is like one of the things that's been keeping me up at night is working with the two guys at Field Every Yummy who are making our game, which if you haven't already heard about it, we're doing a game called Writer Rumble.
Yes, we are.
Which you might have remembered as Word Fighter from back at PAX. And so the two guys who are making it, Gian and Chris, are really awesome. And like, there's so many weird things about it that I never thought about. I don't know if this applies to every publisher, but for one thing, like the most immediate thing for me is this like 1,000 billion pound weight on my back of responsibility to help these guys be successful. And so, you know, like from our standpoint, from my like publisher standpoint or whatever, it's like, man, like these guys are relying on me to make sure that their game comes out and is really successful and is as good and awesome as they have in their mind's eye that it can be. And right. Holy shit, that's some heavy fucking responsibility.
Yeah,
that is some really serious heavy responsibility.
And it's like, you know, to a large degree, it seems like, you know, when you've got an engine and you're trying to tune it to make it perfect and stuff, and you crank it up and it's like, you know, you can hear some abnormalities or little bugs or little things. And so you just turn it off and you get in there and you tinker with it and you turn it on. It's still not quite right. It can, that cycle is very, very, very taxing.
So, yeah, that was the point that I was thinking about here in relationship to Diablo 3, is that like trying to final a game, which is the process of getting your alpha where you're done, maybe even call it a beta. Maybe you've got your beta, you've got everything feature locked, you've got everything down to where you're just crunching bugs. You're just trying to get a release candidate. And man, even on an iOS project, fucking A, it's hard. Mm-hmm. Every time, you would not believe how interlinked, even in an iOS game, all the underlying systems are. You change something that's related to like score tracking, and the next thing you know, some part of your matchmaking doesn't work. And you're like,
right.
What the fuck, man? These aren't even related. How did this happen? And anyway, it's just really difficult. And I have like tons of appreciation now for everybody who's been through that process. It's one thing to have learned and watched it on the outside. Like trying to go through it now is a whole other.
But yeah,
You
look at what Blizzard's doing with both of their games, these big, huge games, and it's like on that scale, it's almost unfathomable, like what they're going through with.
I mean, all right. The only way you have people you trust.
Yeah.
You have to delegate and you break things down. You have to like break things down in small pieces and like just like manageable bites, right?
But we're crazy.
It's still, when you start thinking of the whole project altogether, yeah, you're like, oh crap.
Right.
Like this is because then you start thinking about, especially from a publisher side, right? Like people's like daily lives. These are people's careers that will depend on this product that we have to market.
Thanks.
Like,
yeah.
But when those thoughts start rolling in, like, yeah, then it's
every time I look at like a C-class bug and decide to wave it, I'm like, what if this is the bug that someone like says, your game sucks, and yells and screams about it, even though it was like a little bug that I waved. You know, like, what if that little deal in the UI that like is only going to come up in this one weird edge case, and like you know, but anyway.
Got to make the calls.
Exactly. And it's really tough. Yeah. And anyway, it's been a incredible ride. Like, we're in compatibility testing, finally getting ready to sub.
Congrats.
Like, hopefully you will see it before the end of November. And I don't know. We should have Gion down to talk about it.
That would be really cool, actually.
Yeah, he's a super cool guy.
On the show. Yeah, he's a good guy.
But yeah, the sense of responsibility, and then just like the whole deal of dealing with trying to final a game is so. And of course, iOS team, we have one. Like, there's one programmer, one designer.
Yeah, yeah.
So like, there's no like reallocating things. There's no like moving people around. It's like
please don't burn out.
Yeah, please don't burn out. Please don't burn out. It's really tough work. I know. Let me what can I do for you? How can I help? Anyway, that's cool. We play a lot of iOS games, too. I noticed that everyone on here had down that we were playing Letterpress. How did that game become so damn popular? It's like
that's
such
a good question.
Simple.
Because it's the same thing we've seen.
Yeah, it is a simple, simple game. Like, the iOS game world is so weird because, like, you can do the same thing and just executing on it, people go gaga for it.
I think, right, like, Words with Friends and Scrabble and word games have had, you know, it's the same formula.
Yeah.
I think the one thing that does make Letterpress interesting is like it's less about how creative you are with the words, more about length and more about like how you what words you're making inside, you know, to take up your red boxes or your blue boxes, whatever, right? So like that type of like I start playing the game more like a strategy, like what word can I fit here to take up these boxes instead of oh look at this word but it's got double blue or like a hard blue or whatever, like it's not going to really help me.
So if you're wondering about Letterpress, it is a game where two players compete to take over the board, and it is a grid of letters, and you're both spelling on the same grid at the same or taking turns back and forth. When you spell a word, each letter that you use in the word turns to your color, and if you surround a letter on all sides with your colors, then you lock that letter that's surrounded, eliminating it from your opponent's ability to be used. So.
Well, it's not eliminating it. It's just making it where they can't get any points on that letter until they have used it twice.
They have to, so if they use it
twice. So like if you use it once, it turns it into
They have to buzz
softer
it. They have
red.
To buzz it back.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. A softer red, and then if you use it again, then it's clear.
But I thought if they were – so if they're surrounded – I thought if you're surrounded, you can't break it.
No, you can. You just have to –
You don't get any points for it.
Yeah, you don't get any points for it.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize you could break it and get it out.
Yeah, you can't. You can get it out. It's just that you have to be like, all right, is it worth it to break this out? Like, I really, really – do I really need to use this word, or is there a better strategy? Right?
Uh-huh.
Sometimes I'm tempted. I've never did like a blitz run in the sense of start off like how, like as large as words as I can and just try to like take over sections of word really, really fast. Cause that's all it takes. Like you don't really need to, you don't have to have the most points or the most letters. You need the most points, but you don't have to have the most letters, right? Like whereas Scrabble or something you want.
Right.
The more letters you want, the more words you play, the better it gets.
Well, there's also the tactic that then starts to come in of like the game ends when all of the letters are colored one way or the other.
Yep.
So there's like this very big late game push and pull to see like who's going to be able to color up the most letters before you go to the end game.
So and the end game is like once the board's full or claimed by everybody.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So if you spell the word that inks the last or colors in the square of the last letter,
okay.
You better be sure that you're coloring it in with a score advantage.
Yeah.
That's because you could theoretically end the game as a loser.
Yep. Yep. Oh, that's happened to me when I first started. I was like losing just because I was like, But now it starts. I find interesting that games can take a long time because there'll be like an X or a Q.
Yeah.
Like is the open letter. And you're like, what word can I put here? Oh, let me just try to continue to break down their blocks.
Gotcha.
It's fun.
Highly recommended is. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's cool. Another reason it came up is like the free-to-play nut. I think they do a really good job with it. Their free-to-play model is that you get the game, you can run, you can play two games at any given – you can be playing with two people at any given time. If you want to play more than two games, it's 99 cents.
Yeah, I just bought it straight out. Didn't even think about it.
Yeah, but that's still a good model. I mean, it's like it gives you a taste of the play. You get to play the game for a little bit. And for a game like this, it's like really easy. As soon as you play a little bit, you'd be like, oh, yeah, I could play like three or four games at once.
Has anybody ever used that model before where it's like get an extra round? Like, you know.
You know who is doing it?
Hmm.
Windows.
What?
Windows has a try feature on like the Windows 8. They have a try feature. And then like if you like it, then you can buy it.
Holy shit.
But I don't know
demos?
If it's trial.
Wolfenstein 3D, 3.5-inch floppy disk.
This is even different than games. Like you can try apps. Like, oh, you can try this is just an example, but like, oh, you can try the LA Times app, and if you like it, then you can buy it. If you don't, then I haven't tried any one of them yet. I've seen the option there because I don't know if it's a trial based on time or if it's just like, oh, you want more information? Purchase it up.
Cool.
But it should be interesting.
What else we should wrap up? So, since Ariel's going to be here in a couple of weeks, I can also maybe – I don't know. You guys tell us as listeners. So Ariel and I played some Resident Evil 6 co-op over the weekend. You tell me whether you would like us to play more of this game and relate to our experience. I'll just tell you right now, it's the most – to me, my walkaway impression from sitting down for an afternoon on Sunday and playing it for, 3.5-4 hours with her was modern, unintentionally funny game of unintentionally funny games.
I want you guys to play it MST3K style with like.
We were like MST3K'ing it, just playing it. It was ridiculous. I looked at her about an hour and a half in. I'm like, we are MST3K'ing the shit out of this game.
Little silhouettes, little on screen. That'd be great.
It's so silly. Like, number one, it's meant to be played co-op, and you start off with a forced single-player part. I'm like, when do we get to play co-op? And she's like, I don't know. We both had to sit here and play through the exact same single-player tutorial setup mission, which is like 15, 20 minutes.
Now, are you playing them concurrently? Like, split screen and like.
No, she was playing on her television. I'm playing on mine.
Oh, okay.
Like, there's no way to do it otherwise. Like, you start the game and you would never even know it's co-op or anything. Like, because there's this obligatory first passage that you have to go through, a prologue, prior to the point where you can even pick the campaigns. And once you pick the campaigns, then you can actually go in and set up and set to play co-op and all that kind of stuff.
That's ridiculous.
Wow.
It's really weird. It's so oddly. Like, it's so funny. It's so unintentionally funny. It's like, you know, Resident Evil has always taught you to run from zombies. And in this game, they turned up all of these crazy melee animations. And so it's so easy to forget that you're supposed to run and get away from the zombies because you just want to run up and punch on them because it's so ridiculous to fight them. It's freaking hilarious. It's so silly.
So you guys always give each other the thumbs up every time.
Yeah. I got enough of that on Conan. Anyway, it's really funny. And like was it you that pointed it out? Maybe it was Andrew about how, you know, they put in like this weird leveling system. So off the beginning of the game, you can't shoot for shit because you haven't learned any leveling up yet.
Oh, yeah.
So you got a gun. Andrew, yeah. And you just can't shoot for shit. You're like, oh my God, this is so freaking, like, so not Resident Evil. And so it's so weird. Anyway, it's so weird. All right. There you go. That's a taste of something to come.
I also, this is the quickest of quick shout outs.
Would you rather do it as a finishing move or you want to do it as like
a... I'll do one as a finishing move, right, and one as a quick shout out.
Shout.
Angry Birds Star Wars came out. If you like Angry Birds, you should grab it.
Dude, can you still like Angry Birds?
It's a really simple gameplay hook. And yeah, it's been around and it's so mainstream now that it's not cool to like it.
Do you have Angry
Birds
shoes?
No, I have Star Wars kicks.
Oh, you got Star Wars?
I wore those just today and I didn't even plan on, like, nice. I'm not an Angry Birds fan.
I didn't know them.
But I was like, oh yeah, I'll rock some Star Wars Adidas today. Just for those who would notice.
Sweet.
But it's Angry Birds with a Star Wars motif and little things like... You know, you have a Luke bird that you can fire. When you get close to something, you can hit it, and it does a little lightsaber swipe and chops blocks. Or C-3PO bird will explode, and his parts
C-3PO
will all
C-3PO bird
or RTD2 bird will electrocute dudes.
I like that. There's a C-3PO bird.
All the birds are styled after the character. If you're a Star Wars fan or an Angry Birds fan, even to a little degree, and you liked Angry Birds, you should grab it. It's fun. Pretty much it.
Noted.
There's nothing is gonna blow you away. It's not super surprising. It's just solid.
Let's finish this thing.
Finishing moves.
All right. Well, we already got Jeff, so technically I'll be going second today. Oh, see, yeah. Jeff, he already got his in. Tomorrow, Saturday, if you are up in the middle part of the day, morning out here on the West Coast, or early afternoon if you're on the East Coast, I'm going to be on the third annual Nintendo World Report live telethon podcast. We'll be supporting charity for Child's Play. So I hope you can join us. The topic that I'm going to be on talking about is Metroid Prime, but I think we're going to do like some live call-ins. It's like Skype. I don't know. I'm going to have them like my pajamas and be like, they're like, can you do 10 o'clock in the morning at like 10 a.m. on Saturday? Do you know who I am? Are you freaking kidding me? I'm going to be like, I'm talking about stuff.
Coffee IV.
So look, these guys have been really successful with it. I'm really happy to be able to help them out. This is Billy Berghammer's site that he founded, the Nintendo World Report. Awesome podcast that they do already. Great that they're supporting Child's Play. They've been really successful with raising money for Child's Play before. So look, if you're so inclined, we'd love it if you drop by, listen to us yap about some Nintendo stuff, some Metroid. If they meet all of their donation targets, they're going to be 9 hours of video podcasting throughout the day on Skype. So hope you guys will join us.
Wow.
And, you know, if you can't, Child's Play is a good charity. And if you have another opportunity to donate, then it would be a good thing to add to. I happen to have been personally exposed to Child's Play when my stepdad was getting his leukemia treatment in Seattle at the hospital where the first Child's Play toys and donation stuff went. And it's really cool to see how much beneficial impact video games can have to families that are going through really tough times.
That is super awesome.
It is really cool. There you go. Who would like to go next?
I'll go next.
All right.
I guess, closest experience with Child's Play is that stupid movie with the little crazy doll that kills people. But the actual Child's Play charity, that's so fucking awesome that he's doing that.
This is the third year doing it.
Yeah, that's really, really cool. This is way less important. Just wanted to give a shout out to one iOS game and one non-iOS game that I've been playing that I really like. There's a game called Arc Squadron for iOS. It was on sale for $1, so I picked it up. It's normally $5, a little pricey, but it is a very lengthy Star Fox-like shooter. So, you know, you're controlling a spaceship, blowing stuff up, shooting missiles. Very cool. And the other thing I just wanted to point out is that NBA 2K13 is awesome, and I know we really haven't talked about it much on the show, but I've been, you know, basketball season's kicked up, and I've been playing a lot.
No one told the Lakers yet.
But, yeah, that's true. You know,
hey, it's still early. I'm sticking with my Lakers forever.
It is way early, but yeah, that's
maybe you could help them on defense.
Maybe
coaching.
but it is a fantastic game of virtual basketball that I highly recommend. It's probably I did miss last year's, but all previous iterations they've made some really nice refinements to the controls. Namely, that the right stick isn't like this weird catch-all, you know, moves and shot stick. You actually have a one less modifier button than you normally would. So, you know, turboing and the stick will shoot. Oh, I'm sorry, turboing and the left trigger will shoot. Anyway, it's subtle, but it's the changes that they made are very good, and it actually feels like you have more control over the player. So basketball fans should definitely check that out.
And Jason, you get to wrap it up.
So I'm going to shout out some people and some Naughty Dog stuff. Go to NaughtyDog.com and check out our slideshow contest. We have a slideshow collectibles Nathan Drake out or coming out soon. He looks amazing. Sign up and see if you can win it. And we talked about Game Informer, and in this or the December issue of Game Informer, you can check out a tease at a new Last of Us character being revealed. And then some shout outs to Arnie Meyer, if you follow him on Twitter for Naughty Dog News, Eric Monticelli, follow him on Twitter for Naughty News, and obviously NaughtyDog.com.
Not to be confused with the Nathan Drake Lunchables, which will be in fine grocers freezers starting this fall.
No comment.
It's true, folks. We gotta get him. All right, everybody, that is it. We're going to stick around if you want to. We're going to do a little quick football. Do we have Jeff's picks? Do we have All right, we have Kanata's picks. We got everybody else's picks. So we're going to get out of here to do the tailgate. If you're not sticking around, that's your weekend confirmed, and we are Ghost. Work so hard that you know we play harder. Work so hard that you know we play harder. Yeah, come on. It took a minute for me to see what was going down. My body's vibrating, pulsating to the sound. Hey, bartender, hit me with another round. I gotta finish, she's ready. This episode of Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by Shutterstock.com. With over 20 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips, Shutterstock helps you take your creative projects to the next level. For 30% off your new account, go to Shutterstock.com and use offer code WeekendConfirmed11. All right, we are moving on through the NFL season, and I made a little bit of a comeback last week to go 2-1, bringing me back to 10-16. Jamie, though, in the engineering booth here was our 3-0 champion for the week. Cheers for that.
Congrats.
Meanwhile, Jeff Kanata put up a goose egg in the win column, went 0-3. That's why he really ducked out early.
Ba-boom, ba-boom.
Dropping him to 13-13, which puts him in a tie with the Atlantis Group engineering team and only a win ahead of the guest spot and Andrea. And then after that, James is one above me, and I'm down in the cellar at 10-16. So Del Rio leading the pack at 16-10. Here we go on this week's picks. Sorry, folks, I didn't have a chance to check the fantasy lineups. We'll have fantasy update next week. So this week, the picks are going this way. Number one, I had to go with this one, especially after they took care of business against my Cowboys last week, and then the Saints looked pretty decent, although who knows about the Eagles. So this is the Atlanta Falcons traveling to the New Orleans Superdome, and the Falcons are -1. So Falcons, -1 at the Saints. Are the Saints resurgent? No. Come on. Like, seriously, no. Like, the Eagles are not good, and the Saints, you know, obviously looked very solid. Sproles still probably not going to play with the hand injury, although they don't really need him. They have plenty of weapons in the defensive in their offensive backfield. But I still think that the Falcons will re-expose the New Orleans defense for the troubles that it has. I'm taking the Falcons all the way on this one. And let's see, I'll run through everybody else's real quick. No surprise that Jeff, James, and Andrea all also taking the Falcons. So who knows? Maybe I'm going here. Now it's for you guys' turn. Jeff, what do you think?
I'm gonna buck the trend and say New Orleans.
You're going with the Saints?
Yeah, yeah. Just because.
Anything you're basing this on? Breeze getting hot?
Well, I mean, he's warming up a little bit, but no, it's just there's nothing really. I mean, you're talking about a -1 spread. I mean, yeah, it's there really isn't a whole lot.
Ian Colston are up there in the stratosphere now of the great quarterback and wide receiver pairs in the number 4 overall position. I mean, so you can pretty much count on them racking up some points.
Yeah. Mainly it's just to oppose all of you guys.
You have the guest here Guest went 0-3 last week. Can you improve on that?
I'm thinking we can. I'm going to go with Falcons
also
as well.
Also with the Falcons. Okay, Dave, are you going Falcons? Dave is going with the Saints.
Boom.
And Jamie's going with the Saints. Oh, my God.
Oh, wow.
Wow. The Saints come marching in. The second game, I think Dave's just being brutal to me because he knows I'm not only a Cowboys fan but also an NFC East fan. So he's making me pick the Cowboys game, which is the Cowboys -1.5 at the Eagles. I won't bore you with a lot of conversation.
Otherwise known as this week's shit show.
I mean, both these teams are a mess. Dave thought it's interesting because he's sure that if the Eagles win, that Andy Reid is going to get the boot. I'm not so sure about that. I think that McLurie is not going to fire Reid midseason, but we'll see. We will see. I'm going to sentimentally. It's Cowboys -1.5 at the Eagles. So obviously the Eagles are just so down and out. No one thinks they can do anything. This thing's going to be a disaster.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine this being a good game to watch. But I'm going to go with my Cowboys.
Cowboys.
Jason's also with the Cowboys. Jeff's just deliberating.
This is a coin flip of who's going to play less shitty.
Well, I mean, look at it this way. You got McCoy on the Eagles, who's been having a great season. Vic will still probably play. The Cowboys, without Sean Lee in the middle, they've had a lot of trouble. I mean, the middle of the defense is weak. They can protect against the wideouts, but if they just pump it – if the Eagles win this game, I think it will be because Vic hooks up with Celek and rips them apart down the middle of the field.
Which is possible, but yeah, it's a begrudging endorsement of the Eagles.
All right, so we got an Eagles from the booth. Dave, you have to go first this time. He's taking the Cowboys, and Jamie's taking the Eagles. Everybody else on the sheets here, Jeff, James, and Andrea, all taking the Cowboys, so obviously the Eagles are going to win. And then finally, a matchup that should be a great game. We have the Houston Texans +1 at the Chicago Bears. This looks to be a titanic battle. I'm like, this is game of the week material right here. Texans, like, I don't care what you say about I don't care what you say about the Chicago defense. I mean, I was going to say something. Look, the Chicago defense looks great. I know a lot of you are Bears fans, so don't hate me. I hate it when you hate me. But, man, I don't know. I think Foster can make it.
Schaub and Foster. And even if Foster was playing bad, Ben Tate too? I don't know.
All right.
I think that might have sold my pick right there.
I'm taking the Texans. I think that the wild card here is Brandon Marshall is on a hellacious stride right now. He is averaging something like 80-something yards per game. He's racking up touchdowns. Cutler clearly has him in his sights. But the Texans have already said straight up, we are going to double cover him the entire night long. So, you know, with Alshon Jeffrey out, I don't know who the Bears go to as a reliable secondary receiver. You know, they have a good slot guy. Anyway, we'll see how it plays out. I'm taking the Texans also. Jason, you're taking the Texans.
Texans for sure.
I'm going to go with Ditka's legacy.
Ditka's
legacy.
The Ditka's legacy. All right, you're going with the Bears.
The Bears.
Jamie, what do you think? She's got the Texans. Del Rio has the Bears.
The Bears.
And here's where we split finally a little bit. Jeff Cannata has the Texans. James has the Texans. Andrea has the Bears. So there you go, folks. You'll be able to check back with us next week. I'm gonna see if I can pull ahead of James here. See if I can pull ahead of James. Wait, can I pull ahead of James? Falcons count. I can't. Best thing I can do is be the same. Damn it.
The lesser of two evils.
Lesser of two evils. All right, folks. Until next week, that's it. Have a great weekend. Hope your teams do well. If you've got a fantasy team, hope it does well as well. Talk to you next week.